Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
I'm your host, Tahaka Omana L. Bay, and this evening, we want to know why are the brothers leaving sisters in the United States of America in such large numbers and going to other countries and marrying and raising families with other women? What's going on? I mean, I got into daytime broadcast, and the brother kept telling me to go look at this YouTube video. Man, you got to see this, man. It's unbelievable. You need to look at this. And I said, okay, well, I think I'm going to take a chance and go over there and check it out. And when I did, I found out that, wow, this is something that everybody needs to know about. This is very, very interesting. But before we get started, I want to mention the fact that we are offering our free articles today for those of you who have never received them. The 14th Amendment Exposed, The Commerce Game and How to Play, and the best one of all, in my opinion, Secrets of America, straight out the mouth of a judge. And we have just added a ton of new information for those of you who have my archives. And don't forget to visit our new website at www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Newfreehelpgroup.com. We're going to put that in the chat room for you. Also, August the 16th through the 18th, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, we'll be in the Wyndham Hotel for Morris Summit 2. So make sure that you are here. Look at your calendar. Make sure you check that. Make sure you're down here in Jacksonville, Florida. August the 16th through the 18th, the Morris Summit 2 will be held right here in Jacksonville, Florida. If you have any questions, give me a call at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we try to get you some information, okay? Now, we're going to be dealing with the following questions. Why are the brothers in America leaving the only woman in this country that the Creator gave him? What are the contributing causes? What should the brothers expect from sisters in America? Are brothers in America treated like kings by other women in other lands? Are brothers respected as men by women in other lands? Are sisters in America disrespectful toward the same so-called black man in America today? If the brothers leave sisters in America, will she be able to procreate with other men from other races and bring forth her own kind? Where is he going for love, marriage, procreation? Should the sisters be concerned about this at all? Now, what we're going to need now is we're going to need some audience participation on this one. I mean, I do have a few plugs, and I have one plug. Where we are going to actually hear from the brothers that are in places like Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and South America, as they describe why they are there, what's it like to be there, how they are being treated by the women there, what life is like there opposed to being here, all of these things we're going to get to, and we're going to let the brothers give us the breakdown on that. And we're also going to hear from some sisters as well, because what we want to do is we want to get down to the contributing factors. You know, what happened? What happened? What happened before he left? Because now, just yesterday, in my opinion, as early as the 70s, we walking hand by hand, hand in hand, and hollering about saying loud, black and I'm proud. Sister had to throw, the brother had to throw. And, I mean, we was all down in that thing together, you know. But now, all of a sudden, it seems like we have this separation thing going on. So we want to get down into the rudiments to find out what happened. What could possibly have happened to make the brothers, after the Million Man March, get up and march completely out of the United States and totally embrace another woman from another land and marry her, because we're looking at the statistics here between sisters and brothers in the United States, and the marriage is plummeting between brothers and sisters in the United States. I mean, it's getting to the point where it just ain't happening. I mean, you got little isolated cases and stuff, but and the brothers have not stopped having sex with the sisters. But marriage, you know, they're not trying to get with them and marry them and so on and so forth. And I was just watching a show the other day where on Judge Judy, where a sister drags a brother in the courtroom and sue him, and because she want him to pay for the car she got. And the brother said, well, you know, I shouldn't have to do that. And at the same time, he wants a paternity test, and she told him the baby was his, but he refusing a lot of paternity tests and all kinds of stuff going on. And so I just want to know what is going on with the brothers and sisters in America today. And I'm going to definitely need some audience participation on this and stuff, man. Y'all going to have to help me out with this, because I've been experiencing some things myself, and I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what is it? You know, why are the brothers being ignored? Why are the brothers being disrespected? I mean, outright disrespected. Why? You know, where does this thing come from? You see. So I'm gonna need y'all to help me out on this here. Now I see I got one hand raised already. We're gonna open up this line and get you in here. Area code 310. Help me out. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, what your question or comment.
Islam. This is Brother Andre Hill Bay out here in Compton, California. Peace and blessings, brother.
Okay. Peace and blessings, my brother.
What I am seeing, brother, well, first and foremost, I have to say that no nation shall rise any higher than its woman. I love my Northern Hemisphere sisters to the core. I deeply do. But I've been married close to 26 years. I've got five daughters. And I catch hell in my own household for being not only a conscious brother and a Moorish brother, but just as an Asiatic brother in a household full of women that are being pulled at by every divisive mechanism probably available to us between television programming. You got the boule all up around us with these Zetas and you know, that thing, not teaching our sisters correctly who they actually are. You've got the sisters getting better jobs these days where I'm in construction, I'm in telecommunications, and the lack of jobs that I'm getting and brothers are getting out here is just phenomenal. It's probably like 60-70% unemployment in our community. Yet the sisters are thriving. They're driving nice cars. And so when the brothers try to get at them, you know, they get kind of frowned upon because the brothers aren't bringing as much to the table as the sisters are.
Okay.
So I want to address the source. The source, I believe, is divide and conquer. And I won't say only white supremacy because we got a half, you know, Asiatic there in the White House, you know, so it can't be entirely white supremacy. But it is a controlling mechanism because they see, and this is what I see anyway, the rise of the sleeping giant in this hemisphere. And they use our women to keep us at bay. So we procreate, but we don't support the household because oftentimes, and I just see it in my own household, that there's such an opposition as to who we are and what we're trying to do or trying to be. I mean, I just finally today got my family to sit down and watch Hidden Colors, the first volume.
Okay.
And I've had it for a little while, and I've been talking about, you know, the unity thing for about 25 years within my household. Like I said, I've been married almost 26 years, but it's still like pulling teeth from a grizzly bear. But I still hang in there. But I do have desires to go other places because I hear things from my friends. One of my homeboys, he goes to Brazil almost every year. He's in the Philippines right now, living it up. Because the sisters over there and in those places, they respect, they not only worship an American brother coming over there. I mean, I'm just telling what he tells me. I mean, they love us when we get there because we got something a little special about us, the brothers. Even the brothers from Africa who come over here want to emulate us. So there's something about us here that everybody wants to be, but at the same time, the powers that be want to keep throwing poop in the game. All right? Keep us dormant. That's that Hiram syndrome. You know, keep them in that shallow grave. You know, so that's kind of what we're up against here from what I'm seeing. But I refuse to give up entirely, but I have been sorely tempted many times to get up out of here. You know, get with some real sisters too, by the way, because the world is ours. Let's make no mistake about that. We're not relegated to just this hemisphere. So
that's right.
I would say too bad, too sad for the sisters that don't get it. I was watching Judge Mathis just this morning, and oh man, I want to pull this girl off the television. She brings the brother into court. He had been supporting her, giving her things. You know, she's helping her put her through law school. And it was this $900 item that she wanted him to pay for. And his brother had been supported the whole time. And instead of her just letting it go, she wanted to put him in front of the judge to have an outsider decide what they should be deciding amongst themselves. So you got that going on, too. You got these outsiders going to, you know, just adding fuel to the fire here. So brothers, you know, yeah, we want to screw them because we got these sexual desires. And our sisters are extremely beautiful. But at the same time, like Scheherazade Ali said in Hidden Colors, we good in a vertical position. But when it comes to standing up and talking to one another, we don't know how to do that.
That's right.
So I'll turn that back over to you, brother.
Okay. Well, in my opinion, I just have to go on what I see because I was I grew up fortunate enough around some bachelors, and these brothers here, they were quite well off. One of them had his own, built a garage in his home, had a big old home, had a motor home, Harley Davidson, Mustang 5.0, and a Corvette, and two pickup trucks, and a race car.
He was bomb.
And yeah, but and then the brother, you know, he had plenty of money, and he and I went around to his home, and one day, because I'd go out and we'd sit on his front porch and we'd talk for hours, and but this particular day, as I went to walk up across the lawn and go up on the front porch, this sister busts out the door cussing. And she just strolled. He come on out. I stopped. I said, "Hey man, look, I'll come back another time." He said, "Oh no, brother." He said, "Come on up." And I came up there and we sit down. We start talking. And I didn't want to mention anything. I asked him nothing about what happened. And but he said, "Now you see how that woman there stretched out of here?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "That don't bother me." He said, because as soon as they feathers get ruffled and things will go their way, they won't raise sand. He said, I always get up and show them where to do at. When they sprag out and say, "Well, look, I'm leaving." She said, "Well, let me help you open the door for you so you can go on." He said, "But now what she going to do, she going to go down the street and watch it to see if any woman coming up here." I said, "Well, why would she go through all of that when she could have stayed here in the first place?" So I think something is wrong with our sisters.
I'm seeing though also too that our elder sisters, that their mothers, in other words, are instructing them that, "Hey, don't get with a man that don't have nothing."
Mm-hmm.
So that to me, just like the sister on television today, she, and excuse my language, but she was acting like a straight hoe.
Uh-huh.
He should be paying for this, is what she tells Judge Mathis, you know, as far as her company or her sex. I'm like, are you kidding?
Uh-huh.
Hell, I can get less trouble on Figueroa for $10.
Uh-huh.
If it's got to be like that.
Well, this is this is what I'm witnessing, and I've been witnessing a long time. And I've actually had a sister tell me, "Well, you know, the woman is the prize." And I say, "Really?" I say, "Well, let me take a look at this thing scientifically or numerologically." I said, "In your opinion, compared to the amount of men, brothers in the United States, do you think you got equal amount of brothers and equal amount of sisters?" She said, "Oh no, we outnumber y'all something like 12-1. Mm. I said, "Well, if you have two pieces of gold and 30 pieces of silver, which one is the rarest?" She said, "Well, of course the gold would be."
Mm.
"But on the other hand, when it comes to a woman, that's quite different." I say, "Okay. So what you're telling me is there's an abundance of women in the United States and compared to the brothers, but the woman is the prize that the brother's supposed to be trying to get at." I don't understand that type of thinking. And I asked her, she said, "Well, my mother taught me that the woman is always..." I said, "Okay, all right, I see where it comes from." I say, "What kind of relationship did your mother and father have?" She said, "My mother and my father, my mother used to fight my daddy all the time." I said, "Okay. Well, we have no further questions." We know where all this originated from. So we got to, like I said, I can only go on what I experienced. I had a woman call me the other day. I answered the phone. I always try to answer as pleasant as I possibly could, you know, and I say, "Hello? I call to cuss your son." Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Wow.
First of all, good morning.
Yes, indeed.
Well, good morning. I just wanted to say that I said, "Well, first of all, how long had you had this building up in your mind before you decided to call me and unleash this bomb?"
Mm.
And was it really a serious problem that you called me about? Well, I noticed that when I talked to you, you were so busy you couldn't even half talk to me. Well, I said, well, that's because I'd be working. I said, is that understandable? Well, I guess I work too, but still, it's a mess, man. I see it.
As intuitive as a sister is, you would think that they would come with more intelligence than that. I mean, they mature faster than we do and everything else. But this is also what I see, brother. Religion, in its current condition, has, and especially back in the earlier times where the pictures of the deity was of a blonde-haired, blue-eyed nature.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so and in their books, they're talking about anything black was supposed to have been cursed.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got, sisters with the jobs. You got, and I'm just throwing the psychology out there at this point, and then you got the brothers leaving or the lack of brothers to procreate with, so who are they going to? Well, the ones that need the melanin in order to survive. And I'm going metaphysical at this point. European gene ain't producing. So what do they need?
Right, single population growth, right.
They need that melanin gene to continue their line. So it's almost like a white supremacy type thing almost, but it's even further than that because they know that without that melanin, they can't ascend. So they want to be us. It's trickery at its finest. You know, diminish the male, to where he's not procreating with his female. So now you got them all split up. So where does she go? To the one that has power. She's not going to go to the Latino for the most part because he ain't got no power. He's a new nigga.
Okay? Uh-huh.
She going to go to the one that's got some sort of an economic foothold and have them babies.
Right.
So it's real sinister. You know, not only are they killing our brothers off, open season on us out on these streets, and then we killing each other, of course, that adds to it. But when you got no jobs, you got no money, you got a high risk of violence, which is generally perpetuated by the males. Now, the more intelligent males, they're frustrated. They try to get, and I've been to, when I was young, I'm 54 now, but when I was 20, 25, 30, I would go maybe speak to a sister while I'm out. And I mean, she might be real attractive. I'm not bad looking. And I get a nose turned up at me or no reply. Well, that's pretty frustrating to a brother like myself who comes out of sincerity. And then every time you turn around from a sister who's halfway decent looking or whatever, they got something stuck in them where they were taught something that they take out on, an innocent party, an innocent brother. So, I can't blame them for getting up out of here, while they have a chance, while they're still young and can still procreate and get with a woman that's going, because, I mean, the stories coming from Brazil and Philippines, Sri Lanka, Taiwan, places like that, brothers are treated like gods.
Well, I've heard that, and I know that that's possible because I was trying to tell on relationships, and I was trying to tell the difference between the living in the East compared to living in the West. When I left the East and went to the Western part of the United States, I was treated totally different. And maybe it was because they knew I came from someplace else. I didn't have anything but Eastern colors on. But it was a total different experience. So I can imagine what the brothers, how they're being treated down there in the countries that they are. And what I am going to do is we're going to hear from the brothers that's down there, and what you got to say. I got a
segment that I'm going to run, and we're going to hear and examine some of the sisters and their attitudes and their thinking patterns here in the United States afterwards. So what I'm going to do, brother, is I'm going to go ahead and cut this segment loose. And but before I do, if there's anybody else that have a comment or question, go ahead and raise your hand now, and we can discuss it. And but in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and cut this thing loose, and then afterwards, I'm looking to discuss this thing, man, because I you know, we got to talk about this, man. We got to get this on the table. This is ridiculous. I mean, you pull up to the red light side by side, and there's a sister in their car you totally ignore. Now, I'm trying to figure out why. Because if the brothers are leaving the United States and going and getting a sister with common sense to start with, why are you wasting your time ignoring a brother? Because sooner or later, you won't even be there for you ignoring in the first place. Why are you wasting time? But anyway, let me go ahead and I'm going to cut this thing off. Oh, wait, we got another hand raised. All right. 832, come on in.
Islam.
All right, Islam Mo, let me have it.
Texas Territory, giving honor and praise to Allah and honors to all his prophets that then came and all the honorable brothers. Well, you know, being a brother from New Orleans and been to Florida, father's from Jamaica, and out here in Texas now, I'd have been and had a chance to maneuver around. And I see the attitudes of the brothers, as you stated earlier, that is, you know, one of the motives of the brothers. This is my stepping stone to get up on out of here. Not knowing the chaos he really could bring upon himself and I don't want to say race, but our nationality, you know. But at the same time, you know, you have a lot of sisters, not saying that they're not worth nothing, because a lot of our sisters are worth everything to us. It's just that they haven't been taught, they haven't been groomed in the right manner, in the mind state that they entertain. It's like a lot of brothers don't want to deal with that, so they just go jump to the next best thing that's going to be submissive to them. But in reality, we know we don't need just that submissive. We need that backbone. So those brothers that do jump that fence thinking it's greener on the other side, you know, they really condemning themselves in reality, because they don't have that natural helpmate that's supposed to be there. Yeah, you get you a couple of financial gains right then and there in the long run, but when it's time for that spiritual healing, you can't get it from her. You need that sister, Islam.
Okay, all right. You're talking about that sister in the United States.
Yes, sir.
Okay, because the brothers that's going over to these other countries, they're hooking up with sisters over there. The only difference is the sisters, and they're hooking up with other ones too, but they are in this clip that I'm going to deal with. I actually saw it. It's going to be going up into Arkansas Archive, but these brothers here, I mean, what they were describing, I tell you what, let's go ahead and I'll run this right here, and then afterwards, we're going to discuss this thing, man, so y'all hold on, okay? All right. Let's get this out here and take a look at this thing, man, and see what's going on. First of all, let me look on the switchboard here and find it. Okay, here we go. Let's take a look.
I'd prefer it if black men would date black women, or if they're going to date outside the race, that they still give black women a chance. But far too often, black men are like, I don't want anything to do with sisters. I'm done with them.
I'm a strong, independent black woman. You won't buy me a drink. That just
right.
Don't work out for
you. Independent. Yeah.
If you're a strong, independent black woman,
yeah.
Tell me this.
Man, a girl can't put a food on your plate. They can't put Chinese food on your plate.
Women don't know their role in life. They're actually confused. They're frustrated.
Generally, I don't date men that have less education than I do.
Back at home, it's an upswing of, you know, women taking on women as partners. You know, frustrating the shit out of brothers. So where do they go? How do they pick from this pool?
I came from a litter of eight. All of them, all the women in my family, except one, are single because they all high education.
Everything's materialistic, man. If you're not coming to the table to help support that, then it won't apply. It's materialistic, man. It's bad back home. It really is.
Considering the fact that I only have a bachelor's degree, I don't really think that it's asking that much of a person for them to have a bachelor's degree or a master's degree, because I intend to get a master's degree. And I feel like when you're trying to build a relationship with someone, if you get to the stage where you want to have children, that is something that you need to stress to them as being important. So if you yourself don't have a degree, you might not realize the importance of it. Granted, there are situations where, you know, maybe you didn't have money to go to school, or, you know, there are other extenuating circumstances preventing you from going to school, but you do still realize education is important.
I believe education is definitely one of the things that is one of the hindrances, because women are being educated at a far greater rate than men. Most black men also feel an inferiority complex towards women because they feel that they can't compete with them on the same education and economical level.
When you look at the economy of our society, we've actually moved from a manufacturing-based society to a knowledge-based society, and when you look at who's getting degrees, it's mostly African American women. If you look at the information from the Journal of Blacks in Higher Education, 2/3 of African Americans who are earning bachelor's, master's, and PhDs are women, and and so there's an imbalance.
Have a number of girlfriends and friends that, you know, have great careers, you know, JDs, MDs, you know, have all kinds of degrees, MBAs, and like for the vast majority of them, they're single. And the reality is, you know, once you leave college, like that pool of available black men, at least for black women, that pool of available black men shrinks, you know, drastically once you leave college. You know, going to the real world, either most people have gotten married or they're doing something else at that point. But normally, if you don't find that mate either before college, when you're in college, the chances of you finding that once you leave school is little to none for black women.
A lot of this has to do sometimes with the women that we are involved with. Especially now with the workforce, with the majority of the women making much more money than the man, that then causes a problem with the woman, because now what happens is the woman wants to be the boss at the home and at the workplace. And us as men have problems with that because we want to also be able to lead in our household and take care of our families.
And oftentimes women find it, whenever they're going out to look for a mate, it's difficult to find someone who is, I guess, earning enough money to be their partner. And that can cause frustration, I think, in relationships. And I think that's also one of the issues that we see today with the relationships of African American men and African American women.
Should we be to blame because black men can't, you know, catch up with us or aren't on the same playing field? I think sometimes it comes off as being angry or we don't get along, but I think, you know, Should we settle for less, or should we apologize for our success?
Some of the difficulties that some of my friends are having are economics, and those difficulties are coming from with the woman making more money than the man, and with the man feeling inferior in his own household. And with that, there is definitely a problem, because the man now feels as if he's now almost like a second child in house, and women tend to almost treat their mate like one of the children, and that definitely causes a problem. And I find that, especially even with a lot of my friends, they choose to not even want to deal in those situations, and then they look to do other things and go other places and deal with women of other nationalities other than black women.
have to take a back seat, and I have to, you know, make sure that you're taken care of all day. I have to come in and be like, oh, honey, you know, here's dinner on the table that I made just for you. I don't think that that necessarily exists, but I think it might not necessarily be because, I don't think that it's necessarily because Black women don't want to do it, but sometimes they don't have time.
In today's society, I think what happens is the woman is working. When she comes home, she don't want to be bothered. You know, she's had a hard day. You know, she doesn't want to really hear about your day. She just wants to tell you about her day. And I think that with both parties working and with women making the majority of the money, they feel as though they don't have to give of themselves like that because I'm making the money. I'm the breadwinner.
Money plays a major role in relationships in America, a major role. And that's a part of, and that perhaps is a part of the problem, you know. Perhaps a lot of our priorities are in the wrong place, and family should be the center.
They want to feel that security. It's no different than, you know, your relationship with your father. You still want that security. You want that comfort from a man. That's the number one. You know, so, like I said, if you want a woman to, you know, cook for you, to clean for you, to do whatever else for you, it goes both ways. You want to be taken care of in that way. A woman wants to be taken care of financially. You know, what if women marry for money all the time? That is damn true because women want to feel secure. They want that, you know, security blanket. I don't have to worry about my bills being paid. I know that he is there for me. Whatever happens, we're going to be okay.
I'm not saying I depend on you, but you should be able to. Like, I don't want to know that if I lose my job, you can't help out. If I go to work and I'm making six figures, I feel like you need to at least make 75.
And I also find that a lot of times in relationships, especially with Black men, and they find out that they're having trouble with these women, they decide to go elsewhere and go to other places. I'll have several friends who just went up and moved to Brazil.
My name is Stephen Gregory Holmes from Chicago.
My name is Harold Motley from New Jersey.
I've been in Rio three good times.
I've been in Rio 18, 19 times. I anticipated a poor and kind of desolate, beat up area with people living on the sidewalks and that kind of stuff, man. But she's not like that at all.
On what he's saying, a lot of people have a misconception that this is some kind of third world country. There are people, there are ladies walking down the street swinging shopping bags like any other big city in America, spending
right.
money. And there are things down here that would not survive in the States. Like when every two or three blocks, you got a grocery store. And these people tend to shop exclusively in their area like that. That concept would never last in America, though. We go to one big supermarket, even if it's six, seven, eight blocks away. Here, everybody's down here walking, or stuff. And so people tend to shop in the neighborhood. There's concepts down here that would not survive in America.
Women are noticing that their men are crossing the borders to find happiness, romance, or even just somebody to have a good time, hang out with. They're not taking. I know a cat that used to take women on vacations. He don't do that no more. He come to Brazil. Why? Because his vacation is here.
No, they say, I'd love to go with you, Harold, but nah, man, my wife is not going to let me go down there. And that tells me, if a man's wife is not going to let him come, then you got problems.
I know guys who would love to come down here, but they said, man. And I tell them, I say, you don't want to come down to Rio. I said, because if you do, you're going to come back thinking, how can I get rid of her? This will change your thinking of women down here. I said, don't come to Brazil. I said, take your wife on an Alaskan cruise, buddy. Don't come to Rio by yourself. I said, because you're going to come back seriously depressed when you get to States.
The world is more like yourself than people in the U.S. tend to believe. If you don't travel, you don't understand what's happening outside of the borders of the U.S. And that's why I call back at home the Matrix. They want you to believe that the end all to be all is what's happening in the U.S. It's not. The world is more like one another than the U.S. will lead you to believe. A lot of people want you to believe that the U.S. is the world, and it's not.
Yes, I definitely believe that traveling and seeing other parts of the world is definitely a key thing, because we need to open our horizons. A lot of times by being in our communities, all we see is what's in our community, and we believe that that is the entire world. In actuality, it's really not. The world is a vast, great place, and we need to get out and see more. You know, we need to vacation outside of United States borders. You need to see how other cultures live, how other cultures do things. You need to see how women are from other places and how they interact with their men and how they interact in society. You know, because we need to also see that what we're doing here in America is not the whole world, nor does that make it right just because we're here in America.
A lot of times, you know, the women keep themselves up here. They take care of themselves, you know, and they take care of the brothers too. A lot of brothers come here because they can actually, instead of taking some, you know, someone with baggage on a trip, you know, with them, they can come to a place where they can pay a quarter of the cost, have access to the nice beaches, beautiful women, good food, you know, and brothers could come and chop it up and relax.
Well, I have several friends who have up and moved to Brazil and have found that the relationship levels there are totally different than here. They find that the women are definitely much more, I don't want to use words of servant because that's not what it is. I would say more caring of them and who they are and respect them as men and treat them as such. And it has nothing to do with how much they make. It has nothing to do with anything else but them just being man.
I see a lot of American black women come here. They hold their head down because they can't hold a candle to these hoes. They can't hold a candle to these chicks down here because they take care of themselves. They sexy in what they wear, how they carry themselves.
I work hard, you know, in America, in the state and the city that I work in, and you don't get embraced. I leave America and come here. Brazil's a nice country, man. She gives me warmth. She embraces me. I came here and I met the natives, if you will, and the respect and not admiration, but just the respect factor, man. I come here now because the women treat me like the man I know that I am.
Right.
See, back home, you got to buy all that. I have to buy your respect. I got to buy your time. You can't take a sister out back home in America, man, with nothing. You understand? To me, in the areas that I'm in now, a lot of the sisters working are gravitating toward, to me, negative guys. You know, pants hanging down, hair every which way. To me, that's not being a man.
Right.
If you can work, pay your bills, and be responsible, and be a productive member of society, then that makes you a decent man. Women don't seem to like that anymore.
I do think the Brasileiras here could teach the American women some things about how to treat your man. Because the drama's just not here with them. I mean, even though they know we're transient, they don't come with you with all the drama. I mean, women in the States, within a week, I'm getting all the drama, all the baggage, and I'll be like, man, I said, we've only known each other for a couple of days, you know, and you hit me with your bad credit, your messed up marriages, and you know, and I'm looking at all this stuff, you know, and I tell women, I say, women that are telling me they've been married 4 or 5 times, I say, what you need to say is that you've been divorced 4 or 5 times. I said, that tells a person more about you than to say I've been married 4 or 5 times.
Oh,
I said, something could have happened to the guy. He could have died. But I said, if you tell somebody you've been divorced 4 or 5 times, I said, that lets me know that you got relationship problems. So
you don't want to win them.
Right. And I'm not getting into that, man. I tell women all the time, let me see your credit report, not your medical report. That tells me more about you than anything else. Anything else. How you handle your business. How you handle your bills down here.
I've met a lot of brothers down here. You know, I have more friends here than I do back at home. Because half the time, my homies back at home, their wives know that I live here. They know I'm single. They don't want their brothers, they don't want their husbands to know nothing about this place. As a matter of fact, some of them are forbidden to even talk to me. You know, that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of stuff they go on in the Matrix. You know what I'm saying?
It's good to meet brothers that travel. You know, like I said earlier, you know, I have more friends that out of the United States than I have in the United States.
All right, so what we basically wanted to discuss is like, how did y'all come to find out about Brazil and what brought you here? How did you start on here?
Basically, a friend here, Manny's been coming for a few years, and they've asked me to come. I never came, first time out. I'm
right.
Enjoying myself as a guy.
Right.
It's like I was playing this for.
You?
I started coming from a friend of mine. They asked for years to come down here. The weather was nice. Hey, I travel the world all the time, so
That's good. How about you?
Man, I got college American ski trip. And it was time for me to go to check the Brazilian out.
Right.
And I've been here ever since. Mr. John was my first, apartment.
Right.
And I guess it was 90, exactly between 89 and 90. I've been coming ever since.
This is my third time coming down. Some friends, mutual friends that we all know, told me about it, and I just wanted to come down and see what it was all about. I've been enjoying it ever since. First two times I came down, 06 and 07, and then it's my third time, 2010.
It's my first time. And, I really want to see the big Jesus. I haven't seen it yet. I've been here for 2 days. And I want to see the big Jesus.
You want to see his arm?
I want to see
it. What is your opinion about brothers that travel? And, you know, why do you travel from places like here?
I like to experience the food. And just to see someplace different than where I live and what I already know. And learn something different about the world.
Like you, I'm tired of the ski trip.
I deal with the ski trip with all this bam bam, Virginia Beach. I've been bam bam. I did South Carolina with that beach, and then now I said it's time for me to grow up and be a man. Like the Corps said, separate the boys from the men. It's time to move on. I try to tell my boys what it's like being here, how the culture, how the ladies, how the food. They don't believe me, but they got to come for themselves.
That's right.
A lot of people, they live in a box, and then they complain about things going out going on outside the box. They put themselves in a box by all they know is that corner, that block, that town. That's God, the city, or whatever the case may be. And traveling, experience different cultures, different atmosphere in general. Like, lovely down here, the weather. Meeting new people, a lot.
Yeah, that's a good thing about this camaraderie. This is my first time out of the country ever. You know, I've been stuck within the United States, first time out of the country. And I think once I've made it here, I'll probably do a couple trips a year.
I've been living back and forth in Rio de Janeiro for the last 25 years. My first trip to Rio de Janeiro was in 1985. After I retired in 1990, I moved to Rio de Janeiro. Well, after I retired, I just came down here. I started giving beach parties. Around 1987, I started beach parties. And a couple of guys came down and were looking for an apartment. I used to stay temporarily in apartments. So I said, hey, this sounds like a good idea. So I started renting apartments around 1987. And that went on to me open up my own business, Rio Rentals for Less. And I rent apartments, hotels. I started doing parties and bachelor parties and other types of excursions.
Looking at American culture in general, and in Brazilian culture in general, you know, and not in categorical terms, one of the things, again, what I can say is that Brazil tends to be a bit more collective. And again, the interaction between men and women, it seemed much more natural, where in the American context there's a lot of diversity.
Brazilian culture is a blend of mostly influenced by the Africans and African traditions. the African tradition is strong, and the food they eat, the songs, the music, the instrument. Brazil, the Portuguese brought to Brazil about 10 million slaves. Brazil was the largest slave port in the Western Hemisphere.
Brazil is more of a patriarchal society, where men pretty much are the head of household. There's a great degree of respect for men throughout Brazilian culture.
The Brazilian culture is very paternalistic. You know, I mean, the figure of the man is very important. So I believe the men are taught, you know, you have to find a wife, you know, and you have to be the man of the house.
I come to Brazil, I sit down at the table, I order food. Young lady places a drink in front of me, opens my straw, puts it in my glass, and I'm chilling. Doesn't make her less of a woman, doesn't make me more of a man. It's just that we have different roles in life, and she knows hers, and I know mine. Back at home, they got it twisted.
Why every man cannot come to Brazil and check out how living it you should be treated
right.
One time in your life, why every black man should come down one time before you be put in this earth to see how this culture treats you. Come on, man. It's heaven.
Several years ago, I read an article from Essence magazine in regards to African-American men going to Brazil, and the article was not pleasant at all. It was quite negative.
You know, I recently read some of the articles written by Essence and Jet magazines giving black men a bad light on their plight to Brazil. I think that a lot of those magazines don't fully tell the true story on what's actually going on out there with the men that have moved there. I think that there's a bad rap given to black men in the media in general.
Let's do the math here. You don't write an article to put women down and put it in a woman's magazine. You want an article that's gonna sell magazines. So we gonna put American black women in the favorite. And I'm speaking directly to the article that was written for Essence. If he don't write an article that shows black women in a favorite light, don't sell no article, don't sell no magazine. He lose a job.
I mean, there's been a number of articles since the Essence story about that, I guess, a year or so ago. Where you know, the new thing now is Dominican Republic. A lot of guys are going to Eastern Europe, to Ukraine and Latvia, Estonia, to meet women and whatnot. You know, black guys. And to a certain extent, I think it's sad to a certain extent. Just because, you know, first of all, when you go to those kind of places, the girls that you're meeting are sex workers a lot of times. They're young, you know, underprivileged, underpaid, you know, very impoverished people that I think to a certain extent you're almost like a predator, you know. You go down there for, a lot of guys, are, you know, you're going to meet women, but it's really just for sex is what it comes down to me. You're looking for cheap sex with pretty girls, which is prostitution as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, I mean, the girls, they don't care about the guys. You know, they're there to get your money. They can smell American guys coming from a mile away. You know, a black guy. I think they target you all to a certain extent, but you equate that with love, and it's not. It is not. I mean, you're paying for sex. You're paying for a service.
There's no facts to the articles. The articles are basically a hearsay. There's no way one can tell how many black men were coming to Brazil for sex without doing a survey and a study and to interview and every plane coming down why these guys are coming to Brazil.
I read the article. Whether or not he's on to something, I don't know. But I just think brothers come down here for different reasons, though. Yes, that trade is down here. But to me, it's the weather, it's the beach, it's winter in Chicago, summer below the equator. And to me, I don't need any more than that to lure me down here, though.
Well, I came down here, he told me, he said, hey, sunshine, beaches, and some good times. And I jumped on the plane and came on down. But the article, I feel you should come here and experience what she has to offer Brazil, you know, especially or specifically saying Rio in the Copacabana area before you can put something down on paper and badmouth it.
Right. The people that write the article saying that they don't understand why we come to this place or any other place are biased because they've never experienced it.
Yeah.
So how can you have an opinion of something that you've never experienced yourself?
Right.
That makes no sense to me.
See, a lot of times they have an opinion, they form an opinion before they got here.
Right.
So it's like, if you're looking for bad and you get here,
right,
you want to see bad if you look for bad. If you look for the sun, you won't see the sun.
When everybody heard I was coming to Brazil, you know, the first thing came out was something negative.
Right.
Well, why can't I just be going to see the big G's? Why can't I go to see the
Relax.
Beach? And then had to come around me with the people, because I work with three of these guys.
Right.
You know, we work together in Phil.
Right.
You know, we're all...
Right.
So why couldn't it be that? You know, why did I have to jump to something straight negative?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Just me enjoying myself before my time is up on the planet.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
It's not an issue until the black man starts on.
I agree.
And then it changed. The brown man too. Yeah, the brown man too.
This article by the people who wrote the articles on why black men come to Rio is racially motivated. Is they're using black people to do the job that their white owners wanted them to do. Is the essence is owned not by blacks anymore. Ebony follows suit to, it's all about money. It's all about selling a book. If you look, there are more sex going on right in the local communities. There are more prostitution going on right in the local community in the United States, in Las Vegas, and all over. Brazil is a small percentage of guys coming to Brazil for any reason whatsoever. It costs a lot of money to come down here. And if you look at Brazil itself, Brazil in this millennium right now, Brazil soon will be probably the number one, the fifth largest economy in the world. Once you have set in people's mind, and black people's mind, and black women's mind, that their men shouldn't come to Brazil. Number one, it keeps them from investing in Brazil. It keeps the black women from investing in Brazil. Brazil is on a move financially, economically. This is the place to invest. Look at the seed that's put in these people's mind. That seed will keep them from coming to Brazil and investing in Brazil, all because some stupid articles that really was just racially motivated and racist articles. And that's where I see those articles on Brazil. It's garbage. It has no meaning.
I believe that a lot of what women are looking for today are superficial. Not only has it to do with the way you're built, or you know, whether you have a six pack, whether you have muscles, or you know, a lot of it has to do with how fat your pockets are. You know, or you know, what can you buy me, or what can you do for me? You know, and it's not about what can we do together, but what can you do for me?
A lot of women have their own stuff by the time you meet them. They have their own house. They have their own car. They're very independent. So it becomes a matter when you meet a woman, who's going to sell what? I don't want to move into her house where she's had her boyfriends. She definitely doesn't want to move in my house where I've had my girlfriends. So in a bad market like this, who gives up what? Who sells what?
Well, the society we live in, man, we live in a materialistic society.
Right.
You know, nobody wants to go to, you know, women don't go to the store now and buy a pocketbook. They want that Louis Vuitton.
Yeah.
You know, they don't go to the store and buy a Volkswagen or a Mercedes-Benz or that BMW.
Yeah.
Everything's materialistic, man. If you're not coming to the table to help support that, then they want a posse. It's materialistic, man. It's bad back home. It really is.
I don't want to say that it's that bad. I mean, me personally, I love my beautiful black girl.
Yeah. Right. I agree.
And part of the reason why I'm here is because I love my beautiful black kids too.
Okay.
I mean, they beautiful.
Right.
But there is a cultural difference, not just in Brazil compared to the United States. It's around the world. There is a difference in the way that women around the world look towards relationships
with not just black men, but any man. The system that we have in the United States, the way that society is run, is just different. As far as I'm concerned, it teaches women that they don't need to be in a relationship with a man, whether you're black, whether you're white, whether you're Latin, no matter what color you are. That's just the way that I see it. And I enjoy traveling to different countries around the world and dealing with sisters that don't have the same hang-up that society gives to women in the United States.
I'm more willing to do anything for anybody. Right. But if I know that you got my back, and I know that I don't have to ask you to do this or ask you to do that, right. And you want to just play your role and take care of things, because I'm going to play my role. You know,
yeah,
it's always a financial... I noticed it's a financial, like I said, I've been single for a long time.
Yeah.
And when you meet people, it's like, you meet sisters and they seem to think all they can bring, all they have to bring is some cooking skills and some coochie to the table.
Tell me, brother.
I don't have to worry about if my lady go out in the rain, I eyebrows fall off. I don't have to worry about if she walk out there in the rain, her hair falls around.
Right.
I can go up to the beach and hug a nice, beautiful lady and says, "Hi, sweetie. How you doing?" I don't know. I don't have to go about it. My black woman, I don't know. And then you got to wear a locket. Now, listen, bro. When you were back in the States, how was our black ladies to you? Could you go walk on the beach? She got a two-piece on, nice as she is, nice, beautiful hair. Could you hug her?
Probably couldn't even say anything. Probably couldn't say two words to
me.
You answer that question,
Mom. First of all, I couldn't even get near. You know, she'd probably be calling the cops on me.
I hear this all the time. You think we're abrasive. You think we're too aggressive, whatever. To a certain extent, I think it's true.
Women are insecure because their game is not tight. They know that women in a lot of these countries are taking care of their business. And because they fear that their man might leave them for something else, they don't want him to come here. They don't want him to experience it. They don't really want me to have contact.
And the easiest thing for them to do to stop that is to play their role.
Right.
They want you to play your role.
You know, too, see, that's a misconception too back home in the Matrix, because the role presented, how they tell a woman what their role is almost like saying that they're less than us. We're not created either. We have different roles in life.
Right.
Most of women today are so superficial. You know, they are much more concerned about being beautiful and being young, and they are forgetting other things that also it's important in a relationship, like love, respect.
A lot of black women feel like if a black man can't pay their bills, then what good are they financially in the relationship? Unfortunately, I do think that is something that a lot of black women do believe.
Today, you know, we have unprecedented wealth in the African-American community. We have freedom. We have opportunities that our ancestors would have loved to have had. We have opportunities to travel in a day's time to Africa, to our homeland. We can explore our history and our roots. We have many PhDs, many doctors, lawyers. We have the President of the United States, first family. And so right now we should be in sort of a renaissance. The black family should be exploding. And in fact, in some ways, it's going in the opposite direction. And I believe the culprit in this case is what I would call hyper-individualism. When you have a child, you're not single. There's two of you. Single means one. If you have a daughter or a son, whether you be man or woman, there's no such thing as a single mother or a single father. You are a mother. You are a father. You cannot think like a single person. You got to get up 2 o'clock in the morning. The child is crying. You got to change diapers. It costs more money. In other words, having children is a blessing, but it costs more money than being single. It takes more time than being single, and you have to now be concerned about someone else. So when I refer to single-mindedness or individualism, families cannot afford to be single-minded. That's why we call it single-minded. If I was single, I only have to think about myself. so I can get off work and go to the pub and go drink and hang out with the fellas and do this and that. If I have a child, if I have a wife, I can't think like that anymore. And we have actually some people who are unfortunately married who still think like they're single. Or we have people who are parents who think like they're single. This is probably the single most pernicious thing in the black community.
When it comes to countries as large as America and as large as Brazil, there is tremendous diversity. But I think it's safe to say, in general, and I'm not speaking in categorical terms, that Brazilian culture tends to be a bit more collective, where, again, family is the center of everything. America is known for individuality.
Not only Brazilians, but all Latin Americans very close to the family. We are very, very, very close. We have very strong ties with our family, which I think is different from here.
I think that we need to place an emphasis on the family. I don't think that we hold enough emphasis on making sure that our kids are raised well, that they respect authorities. I don't know what happened to the idea of, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen anymore. I think if we got out and met our neighbors more often and were in commune with them, then we would have a greater community.
Either we have to get back into reinforcing the importance of education without kids, the importance of family without kids, teaching those fundamental core values that they worked not even 20 years ago. I mean, we're not that far off past, I don't think. But the parents have to really get back into being parents, you know, raising strong kids, reinforcing those values. It starts from the home, you know. To me, it goes back to what happens behind those four walls when a child is being raised. You know, and it can't be grandma, it can't be auntie, it needs to be mama and daddy, okay?
Every child on this earth has a mother and a father, every child. If there's 6 billion people on this earth, there's two parents. So there's a father and a mother. And we tend to blur those distinctions. There is a father and mother. The only question is, are they in the same family? When you have a nucleus, a family, there's a mother and there's a father and a child, that's a very strong unit. And I think it has some of the lowest statistics of homicide or suicide or incarceration, the highest set of scores on the SATs and all the GREs and so forth and so on. And again, I'm not an educator. You can sort of do the research on it. But you'll find that when you have an intact black family, the one I've described, their numbers are competitive with every other racial or ethnic group in the country. It's only when you break apart the black family do you start to get these other set of statistics.
You know, we teach the children that, hey, you must get an education. You know, and we need to know that since male children are falling behind at a larger rate, we need to put the emphasis on them, and we need to teach them and give them good role models on what a good black man should be and how to conduct themselves in a relationship that actually works.
Ones that's hurting are the children, and you can see that in the amount of delinquency. You see that 50% of young black kids are not even finishing high school, okay, and you have absentee fathers leaving them.
Jawanta Kanjusu, if I could name him as a professor, he's out of Chicago, I believe. He says that we're raising our girls and loving our boys. And unfortunately, we're not teaching our young men to be responsible. I'm serious. There's a lot of work that needs to be done with young men. Because if we don't do anything, you know, you can already see the imbalance. And the marriage rate for African Americans is at an all-time low. You know, I mean, in the broader society, you know, it's there are issues, but specifically for the African American community, it's low. Part of it is has to do with money.
That's a big thing now. Brothers don't like women that make more money than them because they say he who wears the crown controls the gold.
To the guys, they want to feel like the man, or whatever else. But when you can't pay my bills, you can't do certain things that I may want you to do. You know, I mean, it sort of goes like, well, do I really need you?
Unfortunately, I do think that is something that a lot of black women do believe, but at the end of the day, you need to also look for companionship. Money's great. Money will do a lot of things. I'm not saying that you don't need it, but at the same time, you need to have a companion that you can be with and that you can love. you know, just because he makes a certain amount of money doesn't mean he can't lose his job the next day and not be able to find another one. And if he loses his job the next day, does that mean that you aren't going to love him anymore?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that our priorities are in the wrong place. It's money is important, but I think that family, integrity, self-respect, these types of things, these intangible things are much more important.
Being thankful for the blessings of this life. And then, if you are a professional, even if you're a professional black woman and the guy who you're dating is a bus driver, well, be thankful that you have a husband and that you have a father to your children and you have a home. And the disparities of who's bringing in what money, I mean, this is just money. This is just, you know, your money is not worth more than your husband. Your money is not worth more than your child. I mean, how much would you price your child and having a good education for your child and that child knowing who his father is and the father's in the home? If you just value that, that's worth billions. And so you're making $70,000 a year and your husband making $35,000 is meaningless. But this is what we're doing. We're placing higher value on money and materialism than we are on the family and having a spouse and having children and healthy, happy, sound structure.
Quando eles vêm em grupo, a gente vamos para discoteca aqui no Brasil, aqui no Rio de Janeiro, na TV Show, Rio Santo, a gente levamos os meninos para poder curtir. E também eu queria dizer que eu não sei o porquê as mulheres americanas não gostam que eles vêm para cá. Porque quando eles vêm para cá, eles são muito bem tratados, porque as brasileiras sabem cuidar deles. Entendeu?
Ok, Moas, we are back. Now, we got, I'm going to open up these three lines. Gentlemen, ladies, first of all, let me open up 510. If any of you got any questions or comments about what you heard, let's talk about it. 510.
Hi. Yes, I'm in line in a store, so it's going to be about 10 more minutes.
Okay, well, I'm going to close your mic. We're going to look at the clock and come back.
Come back. Okay.
How about that? All right. Okay, 832 and 310. Let me have it.
Yes, it sounds like I actually heard that article discussion recently. So I'm surprised to actually hear another brother pick back up on it. But we're obviously in a crisis situation here, and I heard a lot of the brothers basically repeating what I had said earlier about, you know, them having to deal with less attitude. You know, I don't necessarily agree with a woman having their place or a man having their place. I mean, I think we're both equal if we're going to be together and all that, you know, so I can open up her drink and give her plate just as much as she can give me mine. I think what our problem is here in this hemisphere, though, is the reciprocation or lack thereof. I've personally have, you know, been the type of person who's been real giving, generous. You know, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I mean, I've torn my behind, you know, and all that. But for the most part, you know, always respected sisters. Maybe have always had more than one, you know, coming up. But, you know, that's what a sheik does, you know. But besides that, I've always treated them like queens, but not always gotten the same in return.
Mm-hmm.
So I can respect what the brothers are saying down there. I also don't believe, you know, on the con side of this, is that some of those brothers are really looking sometimes to, I guess, be a little more sexploitive in their ventures rather than looking for actual love and settling down and, you know, just really having a wholesome thing going there. You know, so it's a two-sided coin there. I can barely hear you more. What's somebody speaking? I'm sorry.
Okay, hold on. Let me see. 832, what you got to say about this, man? Okay, your phone is muffling on us. I'm going to close your mic and give you a chance to fix that, then we'll open you back up. Okay, this is what I see. I've been in, I'll be 60 years old in July. And I think that as far as the sisters are concerned inside the United States and the brothers, I think we are still suffering from the post-traumatic syndrome of slavery
Absolutely.
Inside this country. We haven't understood the onslaught and the attack, and we have not recognized the attacks against our brains that is occurring inside the United States. We don't understand that everything that you see, hear, feel, smell, and touch is actually recorded by the brain, and it will play back in this life. And we have not taken control of the brain and determined what we would allow to be recorded by the brain ourselves. We have turned it over to all the latest electronic gadgets, and then, of course, we got the one-eyed monster, the idiot box, and then we got television, we got movies, and these are the things that play a significant role in the shaping of your life. For instance, when you cut off the television and when you begin to read and study and embrace your culture, that you become heavily armed when you learn different things that were supposed to be given to you that never were and kept from you. Then you're able to use these tools when you put them in place. I have it puts you in a position now to be when it comes to communicating with people, it's very, very difficult. I went across the street to the church, and the guy, he kept telling me, "Man, you need to come to church. You need to come to church." And we're trying to take you to heaven. And I said, "Okay, all right." I had enough of this him. I said, "This is what I need you to do for me, brother." And I said, "I'm not trying to be funny." I said, "You are a Christian, right?" He said, "Yes, I am." I said, "What I need you to do is tell me everything that you know about the religion Christianity." "Well, brother, I'm going to just tell you like this here. Jesus," I said, no, "we're going to get to him, but I need you to tell me everything you know about the religion called Christianity, because you just told me you believe in something. Now, if you believe in something, common sense tells me that you should know something about what you believe in." Okay, so he couldn't answer that. So I said, "Okay, this is what I need you to do. I need you to tell me who you are without giving me your name." He said, "Brother, I don't know where you get your thinking from." He said, "But, I'm in the church. I've been in the church." I said, well, hold on a minute. I said, "Did you ever go to college?" "Yes, I did. I went to college, and I majored in American history." I said, "You majored in American history?" "That's right." I said, "Okay, what kind of history could America possibly have?" I said, "Now, what about your ancient forefathers and the story of your ancient forefathers? What about that?" He didn't know anything about that. I said, "Well, do you mind if I go across the street and get some books?" He said, "No, I don't mind." So I'll come back with a stack of books. He'd run over there. Hold it. Let me look at that right there for you, before anybody get in here. Let me see what you got now, because we don't want you to wake up the folks. We want to control their minds. We got them. We just got to deal with you." So so he been scrolling. "So, yeah, well, I'm familiar with a lot of these books here." I said, "You are." I said, "So what is it that you think you could possibly do for me inside this building here?"
"Wow."
"Well, I'm trying to show you how to go to heaven." I said, "Okay, where is heaven?" "Brother, you're making this very difficult." I said, "These are legitimate questions, man.
And simple questions.
You're trying to convince me to do something But you are not giving me any answers to come to any satisfactory conclusions about anything. I said, every one of the questions I ask you, I can answer it. So now, since he couldn't make no headways there, so what he decided to do is to tell the pastors and the rest of the deacons and all the women of the church, you must stay away from that evil, wicked man over there.
Wow. If he can't control you, you're the devil.
Yeah.
And I get the same from one of my older daughters, you know, the exact same thing. You know, she was born a bay, no slave name attached to her. Yet her mama's a preacher, and she was a bay. She named her other daughter, who's not my daughter, Bay. And I asked her, I said, don't you know the responsibility that comes along with this name? Oh, I just want them to have the same name. But didn't teach them anything about themselves. Threw the baby completely out with the bathwater. Now, this is a woman. There's another sister here we're talking about here in America who I was in love with at one time. Loved my daughter to death. She's right here in California, right up the street from me. Yeah, she's right down there was a church of what's happening now there, you know, chasing after that blonde-haired, blue-eyed letter J that came out in the 16th century. She don't know nothing about her lifestyle. Nothing. And she wants to try to debate me. And you know, I set her right, you know, and she leaves me alone for a few months, you know. In fact, she doesn't even come at me anymore with any rhetoric, you know, because she knows that I'll, you know, just basically decimate her, you know, with that. We know what it is. But it's still being used along with the other mechanisms to perpetuate the powers that be control. I mean, it's much deeper than, oh, the sister got problems with the brother. All right, this stems from the Vatican. Mm-hmm. Let's tell it like it is. I ain't afraid of these devils. You know, Vatican, the fake queen, the fake president who's a CEO. You know, I can go on and on.
Right.
You know what it is.
Oh, yeah, well, we know about that.
And so, you know, just to kind of take the weight a little bit off the sleeping giant here, I mean, we got that Stockholm syndrome, something fierce in us. You know, we fell in love with our captors.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of where we're at. We don't want to know nothing past slave history. And believe me, I pay it forward all the time, brother, you know, with the brothers and the sisters. I think I probably get more reception from the brothers than I do the sisters, because the sisters tend to think that you're trying to get some play with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're speaking to them, it's something still kind of caught up in their head with that. They think all you want is some draws. I'm like, if you're not tantric, I don't, you know, if you're not doing it on a Taoism type level with me, you're wasting my energy. All right, we forgot how to make love here in this hemisphere. We done sunk down to these lower chakras to almost like a bestiality state where it comes to having actual sex and making love and things like that. I mean, we're horrible, you know, just collectively speaking in this hemisphere. So we got to, you know, deal with that as well. So there's a lot of...
taking control of the brain is the number one step. When we realize what has happened, we have to realize that being highly melanated people, or what they're calling melanins, are actually high concentrations of carbon. We represent genetic annihilation to any species that are not that are not procreation. If their procreation rate is dropped, that automatically, just through regular procreation and the keeping your family intact and producing your kind, but automatically will cause your numbers to proliferate. But when we look at all the underlying factors in the thing and remove fear from you and replace that with skill so that you and your eyes will be open and you can see who and what has happened to you and look at and examine the severity, then you can do some things. But now I got a couple of callers with the hand raised, so I'm going to open up these lines. We'll start with 646 this time. I'm going to leave your line open, bro. 646, come on in.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
I'm trying, Susan. What about you?
I'm doing okay. I just wanted to kind of talk a little bit more about expand a little bit more on what he was saying just now. Because I moved out here to California from New York, and I just find it just incredibly difficult with black
people. Hello, you're breaking up a little bit. Your phone kind of breaking up a little bit.
Is that better?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I was just saying, I just find it really difficult to have conversations with black people in California.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, you find such a wide variety of thought. And out here, it seems like every black person I meet, they ask, well, what's your home church? And I'm like, well, I don't go to church. You know, I don't, it's like not, you know, I mean, I'm Buddhist, you know, but you know, are a lot of the things that you're saying, of course, because Buddhism goes all the way back to us anyway.
Yes, ma'am. We don't honor all of them.
Yeah, so we're chanting, and, you know, each chakra correlates with each part of Nam-myoho Renge Kyo and all of that, you know, so it's all connected. But I'm saying, like, anything that has you looking outside to something, that's a problem.
That's right.
That's an enslavement process. And what I see is happening out here, it's like very cultish. You know, I see the same program that goes on in cults that I see in these churches.
Oh, yeah.
And mainly directed at women. I'm actually writing a book about this now, you know, that I call the pimp preek syndrome.
Say that again, sister.
I call it the pimp preacher syndrome.
I love it.
Because you have the same kind of techniques that are used, that pimps use, that preachers use.
They're the same people.
And when you look at it, you know, that's why you were saying you were having trouble with your daughter and your ex, and, you know, they're programmed.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to be real clear about that. It's not really these women's fault. You know, it's just like any woman would protect her pimp, even though he's abusing her. You know,
but reject their father.
Right. Well,
and their doctrine says, honor thy mother and father, that thy days are long upon this earth.
Right.
They don't even follow their own doctrine.
But they're programmed to have more of a focus on this person that stands in front of them every week in these thought control sessions, because that's what I call them, thought control sessions.
Absolutely.
And they use neuro-linguistic programming techniques.
Weaving spells.
You know, read about NLP. I don't know if you have or not, but I'm saying, you know, everyone out there, read about neuro-linguistic programming. When you're using music and rhythm and beats and repetitive phrases and the walking back and forth and the emphasis of certain words, and they're programming these women. And there's mostly women in these churches.
Absolutely.
You know, so you have to really understand that if your daughter is going to attending these services, she's being programmed. That's what's happening.
She doesn't want to know anything else, and that's
right.
That's a huge part of our people's problem.
But just like if you go to any other kind of, if you have someone who's on drugs or someone who's in a cult or someone, what do? They put them through rehab and they put them through deprogramming.
But this is a drug to them.
Right. And that's exactly what it is. And like what a pimp offers is safety. There is no difference between what a reverend offers and what a pimp offers, because a reverend will tell you, you are safe in the arms of the Lord. You don't have to be afraid. The Lord will protect you. Now go and get out there and give me your money so that you can maintain this level of safety. And that is something that I think a lot of people don't realize, is that that is what is being put out there as the overall desire that's being met for black women, because they don't feel safe. If you're in a community where you're constantly under attack, you know, when you're constantly being attacked because you're black, you're constantly being attacked because you're a woman, you have constant issues around crime and all these different things that are going on in your neighborhood and everything, you need to feel safe. So the Lord will protect you. You have to, you know, really think about what it is that's being told to these women. They feel that no matter what happens, no matter what war goes on, no matter what kind of situation happens in their neighborhood, if somebody's murdered, if somebody's raped, if there's a crime committed, I'm safe and protected because I'm highly favored. Because the Reverend told me that all I have to do is come to this weekly session and give my money and believe in what he says, and I will be safe and protected while these other people are not.
That sounds like a pimp.
And that's
exactly what a pimp tells you.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break, and we're coming right back. So y'all hold on. I'm going to close the mic so we can go on break. And when we come back, we'll continue this here. Ladies and gentlemen, we're dealing with brothers leaving sisters in the U.S. and going to other people in other lands. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right
Hello,
back.
This is Glozell, and got a confession. Okay, I visited in 2000 church New Destiny, Pastor Zach Timms, Pastor Zach and Reva Timms. They have separate churches now, but that's how it was then. And I went on a Wednesday night, and they were having this prophetess. Okay, I don't know what qualifies anybody to be a prophetess. Do you go to school? Do you have a license, papers? I don't know. You know, but she was really good. And I heard she was really good, and the place was really packed. And she was preaching, you know, it was good. Okay, but after 2 hours, I'm not paying attention to anybody. You know, it really, you know, even movies, I'm like, okay. So I started doodling, you know, just la, 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 la. And then I hear you come up, and you come up, and you come up. And she was picking people out of the audience to come up. And I was like, oh, okay, she's doing something. Okay, so you come up. And then she points to me, you come up. And I kind of look back like, me? She's like, yeah, you come up. I'm like, oh, okay, uh-oh, I don't know the question. I don't know what's going on. So I'm just kind of taking my time. Like, you know, anybody know what's going on? Anybody know what, you know? So I'm right in the middle, right in the center aisle. And then there's like 20 of us. So she starts at this end. And in the name of Jesus. And God. And God. And she goes like this. And the people start falling out. Okay, so she goes to the next verse. And God's got a message for you. And he is going. And they fall out. And I'm like, oh, snap. I knew I wasn't going to fall out because I wasn't even paying attention, you know. So I was like, oh. And so they're getting closer, and she's getting closer. So I made a deal with God. I'm like, look, I'll just wobble, Lord, and you know, I'm not going to pass out because that'd be like a full-fledged lie, you know, but I'll just, like, oh, okay. So she gets to me, and you're going to be successful. God done told me I done seen a plan for you. And I was like, oh, whoa, oh, you know, trying to be dramatic, you know, because I mean, everybody else fell out, and I'm like, I wasn't paying attention at all, you know. So, and she kept going, I'm like, oh, she's going to keep doing this till I fall out. So I was just like, okay, Lord, I'm sorry. But I went, and then I fell out. I'm so sorry. But I felt the pressure. I felt the pressure to be like this really good person. Like everybody else fell out, you know? Everybody else fell out. And this is on tape somewhere. This is on tape somewhere. New Destiny has a tape of me just going, whoa! Anyway, then I'm on the ground like, okay, like when do I get up? Like really, when do I get up? I have no idea. Like, is everybody else up and I'm the only one laying down? So I'm the only one laying down through the whole service. Everybody else has gotten up and I'm still like, you know, so they really thought I, you know, it was just, I'm just so sorry. But I didn't know what to do. So I do believe that people really do fall out. It's just that I was not paying attention. I was not caught up. And I was called to get a blessing. You know, I don't even know if it works that way. I'm thinking that God can talk to me personally. But I don't, you know, that's all good and all. And so I apologize again for falling out. All right. I faked it at church. Okay, over and out. Amen.
Oh, okay. Eric code 646.
Yeah, so. Wow. Okay. Well, that's the other part of it, too, is the social aspect. And what she was pointing up in that recording was I felt compelled to go along with what everyone else was doing because otherwise I would have embarrassed the leader and I would have embarrassed myself. And I don't want to make a scene. I don't want to be embarrassing. I don't want to feel like I'm the outsider. I don't want people to look at me like I'm, a pariah. And the other part of that is that black women especially have, please don't get me wrong, I'm not coming down on black women, I'm just saying that these are the women that are programmed in these churches. You know, I'm very much ardent about being pro-black woman, so don't get that twisted. I'm just saying that the women that operate within the context of these patriarchal institutions are programmed to bully other women that don't conform.
Is that
there's
right?
A bullying process that goes on. Oh, you're a sinner. Oh, I'm going to pray for you, sister. Oh, something must be wrong with you. Oh, and then they start to ostracize the other women. And I've been in situations where it's like, you know, the first thing they'll say is like, well, what's your home church? And I say, well, I'm a Buddhist. Right away, I start getting treated differently.
Mm-hmm.
So that bullying process is very significant because if this is where you, if these are the women in your neighborhood or these are the women that you congregate around all the time or these are the people, what do you mean you don't believe in God? What do you mean there's no God? What do you mean Jesus never existed? How dare you? You know, right away, you are ostracized. You don't come to the picnic. You don't come to the, you're not invited to the baby shower. Not invited
Let me ask you this, sister. Okay. Now, this is what I have found also, and I need you to give me some answers to this. I was talking to a sister, and she says, I need to find me a man. And I know the sister go to church every Sunday. I say, You need to find a man. I say, are there any men in the church? Oh, yes, there are men in there. I said, well, why, you know, are all of them married? No, there are some singles in there. I said, well, why don't you just get one of the men in church? You're in church every Sunday. She says, I don't want them. I want a man. I said, well, wait a minute. Is you trying to tell me that, explain that to me. She said, look, I just want a man, and I'm not trying to get one out of there. I said, well, could you give me – that's all I can say. I said, well, okay. So what I want to know from you, what is this?
Well, okay. Look, going back to my original example, you know, would you want to be with a man who likes being pimped?
Oh.
If you were a woman?
Wow.
You know
what
I mean? Like, this is, you know – what's going on in there. And that's why I said you have the vast majority of the parishioners are women. because it's a pimp situation. So why would you want to be with a man who allows another man to pimp him? That's not really a man. So this is why she's probably on a subconscious level. She may not have done an analysis of it, but, you know, this is why she's come to this realization, like, that's not, you know, the kind of guy that I want. So there's either going to be ones that are in there because they enjoy that, because they're probably, you know, some of them are, because there's a lot of rampant gay activity in the church, rampant.
I'm glad you brought that up.
And, you know, there's also this notion that, you know, these men are not going to respect the women in there anyway, also because they're not considered to be marriage material. So, you know, you very few of them are actually getting married. I don't see a lot of these men wanting to be with women who have four other entities, you know, before them. I mean, if you got God, Jesus, the Holy Ghost, and the Reverend, then your man's going to come forth and sit in line. I mean, what, you know, how's he going to be in a viable relationship with you?
Beautifully
true. You know.
Yeah.
So,
well, let me ask you this. What is what are some of the other contributing causes, in your opinion, as a sister, that is leading these brothers to leave sisters in America and embracing women in other countries?
Before I can tell you that the man I'm with now, he's brilliant, and, you know, he's like, you know, I was thinking about it too, because he was out here in California and I'm in New York, you know, and I came out here, and he was like, well, wow, you know, I'm glad you came out here. Because it's very, the mentality is just so narrow. And like I said, it's like all this rampant mind control that the men that aren't, you know, that can see through this and who aren't being pimped and who aren't programmed are kind of like, well, okay, what do I do? You know, I don't necessarily want to be with a white woman, but, you know, maybe there's some, you know, people that are of other cultures that I can deal with, you know. My man has even said that. He said, well, you know, if I really wanted to go out there and be a player, I would have gone on over to the Philippines and had a ball, but that's not really me.
That's
you
right.
know, so, I mean, I think that a lot of that comes from this notion that there should be some immediate gratification on the part of these men, and they're giving up. They're not really sustaining community. They're not really interested in anything but their own self-gratification, and they're not really interested in working with women that are here, because there are plenty of black women that think exactly the same way I do, and they're very informed, and I'm sitting up in the church every week, and they're here. But it's like, you know, if you're going to constantly focus on one aspect of what's happening and not everything else, then that's all you're going to see. So, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with, well, it's all about me, and I want what I want, and I want it right now, and I'm tired of dealing with everything, so I'm gone. You know, and it's just like any other form of escapism. You know, struggle is struggle. You're not going to find someone instantaneously when you know your people are under an attack from mind control, from every source there is, from media to church to big pharma to everything else. I mean, come on. You know,
let's not forget Big Bird. I'm going to go over here to area code 510. Yo, hold on. 510, are you there? Hello, 510. Okay, 510, not ready. Let me go back and try 832 again. 832, we ready to chat now?
Yes, ma'am.
Area code. Okay, let me have it.
All right, I'm sitting back and I'm listening. You know, like the sister say, hey, the media plays a hell of a role. And I was sitting back and listening. You know, it's a hell of a game. I didn't know it was that deep over there to where we were being used. You know, because, you know, every brother around here, you know, they're not in peace. You know, every brother desires to go to the islands or desire to get out of the States to go get that exotic peace, you know? But I didn't know that us so-called blacks over here in America were being marketed like that. that was a mind blowing jewel that was dropped right there. But you know, I'm baffled. I just can't put my finger. I'm like on both sides of it after hearing the brother's innocence to speak. I'm on both sides, you know. Ella is a hell of a high step, but at the same time, you know, you leave your sisters behind over here that do need you, you know. Even uh-huh. though they're sisters over that way, they're sisters, not like they're going for Europeans. They're going for a sister, but then again, they may be being used in the long run. They taking chance, you know. But I guess brothers say, hell, okay. I've been through these sisters over here so long, I guess I'll take that chance.
Well, let me open up go ahead, brother.
I just had a question. It's for the sister, too, and I didn't catch your name, sister.
My name is Rena. Rena Walker has a
peace to you, Rena, brother Andre. My question is, if you know, why have our sisters stopped taking care of themselves? And I'm generally speaking, in terms of, you know, keeping up with exercise and not so much of the Eurocentric look, you know, with the weaves and stuff like that. You know, I'm not so much into that. But, you know, looking the part, I mean, I see in the community of Compton where I live at in Long Beach area on how the sisters look on a daily basis. And when they come out their houses, they're looking trifling.
Well, I think you have a number of factors. I think, first of all, there's a lot of depression going on. And no one talks about mental health and mental illness and support systems for women and emotional support in the Black community. There's a lot of anxiety and depression going on in the Black community. Black women are depressed. They don't have money. They're poor. They don't have, even when they're working, they're poor. Most Black men have a tendency to think, oh, well, the Black women are taking all the jobs because they're going out to work every day. No, they're not getting any money in their paychecks. So they're poor. And they're trying to keep up with images that they see, and they can't. And there's an apathy that comes in with that. There's a depression that comes in with that. If you begin to give one of those women emotional support and understanding, and you really sit down and sincerely try to talk to them and try to help them to get to the root causes of some of the things that have gone on in their lives, the abuse, sexual abuse, any kind of physical abuse, any kind of emotional and mental abuse, and they start to break through, you'll see an improvement in terms of their physical appearance. That's well, with anyone.
I was at Food for Less the other day, two days ago, and I was watching the sister's little boy run to the back of the car out near the street where there's a lot of traffic coming through, and he couldn't have been no more than 3 years old. So I saw him do it once. He ran back, and then he came all the way around towards the trunk area and almost got in the street. So I jumped out the car. I said, hey, grab your baby. So I'm thinking in my mind, okay, this sister's not paying attention to her child. And then when I looked at her, her hair is all, you know, tore to shreds, you know, clothes, you know, not that she couldn't have did better, but that she just chose to come out of the house that way. And I know we're a depressed community. I mean, I'm depressed in my own household, and I'm married, you know. So I guess.
I mean, you have to really kind of look at each person's story. You can't really say, well, you know, because I hear a lot of that from brothers, too. They're like, oh, well, you know, I'm with white women because the white women, they know how to work out. They know how to do. But, I mean, you know, when you think about it, what motivates you to get up to work out? What motivates you to get up and start running every day or you know, getting on a bike or do, you know, all these things? It's because you want to improve.
Self-work.
And you want to. Right, because you have a wherewithal within yourself in order to make that happen. But if you're depressed and you feel that there's no hope and everything around you is depressing, your community looks horrible, there's no one there to protect you, you know, why should you?
See, that's
care?
The point. I was there to protect her child, and the feedback that I got from that was like, well, I shouldn't have been saying that to her.
Right.
I'm like,
well,
are you kidding?
And of course. Yeah, because
I'm like,
he doesn't
are you
have
kidding?
Any
I'm trying to make sure your child doesn't get killed. So I was
absolutely.
There to protect.
Absolutely. So if you sat down and really talked to her and let her tell you her entire story, you might know why that came about. That doesn't just happen out of the air.
And
I mean,
agree.
When you look at, you know what I'm saying, like black girls, when they're little girls, they're the smartest things in the world.
Mm.
You know what I mean? They're smartest in the world. So how did they get to that point? There's a process that happens.
Absolutely.
In school,
yo,
from media,
yo, hold on a minute.
All of that.
Hold on, let me open up some of these lines here. Eric code 347. 347.
Peace, Noah. This is coming to you, Brother Tahaka.
Okay.
Peace
all
to
right.
the family. And
thank you.
I love the sister who's given the analogy psychologically concerning the mental illnesses about people at large, you know, because a lot of our brothers and sisters are mentally ill. The issues with our sisters specifically is that the infrastructure of white supremacy had put on her mind where she had to play the role of a white boy and try and get her place in society, because women have been suppressed so much, especially when it comes to our women. So now, there's a brother that I know. He has an African wife, and she hits him with the same issues that a sister here does. So I really don't see any difference if a brother is leaving out of the United States and see a sister, or in the United States and see a sister, because it's really the same sister, it's the same woman. So I don't see why this particular documentary made it look like if though brothers is just leaving out of the United States going to Brazil, because as far as I'm concerned, our sisters is all over the planet. But now, do you find the same behavior? Yes, you do, because again, the brother that I know, he has an African wife. She's busy coming at him. She's in school, she's working, and she's harassing him about why he ain't going back to school, why he can't find a better paying job. You know, and you would say, well, wow, you know, her coming from out of a quote-unquote third world country, you know, coming here, you know, making a better life, you would figure she would appreciate this brother. But she's darting at this brother as though she was a sister that was born here with the same attitude. So you can see that it's a mental issue, it's a spirit, all right, that we can't even fathom that there are also spirits that looks us, that eats at us as a people spiritually, all right? Because we're not even talking about church or being a Muslim or being a Buddhist or whatever faith that we may have a label on. You know, these people are working all kinds of witchcraft and occultism. You know, like even in the industry, you know, there's a lesbian homosexual spirit that's going on. All right, and we don't see these things, that we are being attacked not only physically, but we are attacked mentally, and we are being attacked spiritually. And what I love about the sister, she hit right on the head, because what she stated about the church, I grew up in the church with my mom's, who's now a pastor. I haven't spoken to my mom's in 7 years.
Wow.
Because of the same thing this beloved sister on the phone is talking about right now, because of the fact that it's like a pimp thing going on. I didn't agree with it. Then when I didn't go along with the program, you have your members of your church to attack me. So I had to stay away from your members, stay away from your church. And I'm not even the person that I'm going to church. It's just that's my mom's. I couldn't even have a family-oriented relationship with my mom's because she was so busy caught up with the church thing, doing her thing with that situation. So I said to myself, well, wow. And the sister's right, because even the men in my mom's church are like henpecked men. So you'll find the sisters eating and pecking at the brothers because, you know, they say in Scripture there's no condemnation in Christ Jesus. Yeah, you'll quote that Scripture, but there's so much condemnation in the sisters and the brothers in the church that who's putting the fear on them is the pastor. And it could either be a male or a female pastor, and it doesn't really matter. You know, but
exactly,
I just
and that's what a pimp does. That's exactly what a pimp does, because the pimp will make you feel fear. If you don't go along with his program, you are going to be in fear. You know, so this is the same mentality, you know, that goes on. And the bullying, like what you said, you know, everybody came after you. That bullying factor is a major factor in what they utilize in order to keep people controlled and beholden to that nonsense.
So okay, y'all, I'm going to open up, let me open up these lines here, the switchboard, steady open up. Y'all hold your horse. Area code 904. Hello?
Hello. Hi.
Hey. What's going on there? Let us have it, Sister Sharon Hunter Bay.
Wow. Hi. Well, very good program, Brother Taharka, today, and I just wanted to give a comment and weigh in on it about brothers leaving the United States in search of their dream female, I guess, or dream woman in whatever country. My grandmother had an old expression about jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. That's what I kind of consider that to be. I know a lot of women, I know a lot of sisters and stuff in different educational backgrounds, different levels of success, but I think they're all pretty much the same no matter where you go. And if they can find happiness over in Brazil or whatever they is, I think that they might initially find it, but pretty much it's going to end up with the same old, same old. We're going to be right back to dealing with sisters. So don't run from us, brother. Help us. Strengthen us.
Okay.
Don't run from us.
Right. Well, you know, the largest population of Africans outside of Africa is in Brazil.
That's right.
And you know, so you're going to be presented with a whole new set of problems because the crime rate and poverty is rampant in Brazil. So you're going to leave Harlem or Compton and go to Brazil. I mean, you're really going to be in court. So, you know, full speed ahead on that, you know. You're going to be dealing with a whole new level of
All right, 404, come on in. 404, 404, are you there? All right, let's go down here to 803. Area code 803. Okay, no 803. Let's go down to 314. Area code 314.
Who is this? This you, Taharka?
Yeah, this is me. Who is this?
It's your daddy. This is Pianki.
All
that's
right,
pretty
daddy. Let me have it. Where your
Taharka
crutches at? If you my
come
dad,
on
where
now
your cane? What's on your mind?
You know, this you mentioning about this black American male who married this woman from Africa and pointing out deficiencies in her desire to acquire wealth. I mean, she recognized the wealth opportunities that need to be exploited, and that's probably what her reference is. And there's nothing wrong with that. That should have been something that should have been worked out in the beginning. Many immigrants want to come into the U.S. in order to exploit the wealth opportunity. The one gentleman mentioned the fact about black women being so out of shape physically. And, you know, I mentioned earlier to you, this could apply to males too, but being that the topic of your program is referenced men, black men in America leaving black women to some sort of degree. That's why I come out made comments as I did. But it's true. If you go to your parks where you see jogging going on or walking, you can see the difference right away. And for whatever reason. And, you know, the funny thing is, this is, I don't think of depression. Of course, depression does play a part in this, but I don't think it's the sole reason, because you can see that same sort of of physiology going on amongst your young teens and young adults. So it's something
I just want to clarify that too, because that's one aspect is depression, but I think it's a major aspect because Black women don't have any support systems. There's no therapists, there's no emotional groups, you know, support groups, there's no, you know, like you go to white women's neighborhoods, they got every group in the world, you know, like we don't have those kinds of support in our communities specifically designed. So like if you have these women that are raising children by themselves for the most part, they're completely overwhelmed, who do they go to? You know, so what do? They go and they eat. You know, they get high. They smoke. They drink. They do any, you know, eating is just like any other kind of vice, you know, that you, a habit that you engage in. You're looking outside of yourself instead of within because you want to have some sort of satisfaction to get rid of pain. And you need to get rid of that pain immediately. So, you know, just like the brothers are running overseas, you know, the women are running to the refrigerator. You know, it's the same thing.
Well, you know, I married a woman from Ghana, West Africa, and I'm not suffering from those traits. I see the same sort of physiology that go existing within communities where the average home is, you know, over $500,000. And black, it's all black communities, too. You know, here in this area, you have one called Barrington Downs. So it's a complicated issue. A complicated topic. There's no one solution. But if a person was to pull out something that would fit well in the discussion that he has going on here, the one brother make reference to the physiology, and I would agree we could go on to other things too. But that's the most obvious thing that you see. You don't see white women, surely Asian women, that's carrying that type of, you know, that type of unhealthy of size, and it ain't big bone neither. That we
when
see
you're carrying it, but you're but what I'm saying is that, you know, it's one thing to just sit back and judge someone. It's another thing to really get into understanding their story, you know, and understanding how they got to that point. You know, a lot of times women, black women, put on weight for protection. If they've been sexually molested as little girls, if they've been violated in some way, if they don't feel safe in their neighborhoods, if they've felt subjected to traumatic events, which, you know, happens around black women all the time in our neighborhoods, you know, that is that's a layer of protection when there are no men. So you can't really just say, oh, this is just, you know, black women just lazy. No, that's not really, you know, there's a whole lot more going on with that because, you know, you can't just say, oh, black men are just criminals. You know, that's ridiculous. You know, we know better. So you have to give an understanding as to this person, as first see her as a human being, not as a body to be objectified, but a person that has a story, that has experiences, that has different issues that have come about. And, you know, how do we work as community in order to implement support systems for these women that don't have any recourse?
Well,
you know,
would
how
agree.
Do we do that?
You know, I do recognize there's many father support systems that exist. I know of one that goes on here in this town. But there's nothing keeping from black women or black people from establishing those type of support systems that would address these problems.
But we don't have them. So then you're wondering why the problem exists. That's why. That's one reason why. The other reason why is because we have food deserts. You know, if you have black women at home with children, they're raising kids by themselves, they don't have money, if they're on food stamps or they're not making enough in their paychecks and they have to more often than not share that paycheck with one or two other people, then, you know, when they run into the Arab store on the corner or the Latino store on the corner, whatever it is, the foods are not nutritious in our communities. Food deserts is a really big problem. Then, you know, you're going to go somewhere and get something cheap, it's not going to be nutritious, and you're not going to have the right foods available to you to be able to even sustain a program. You know, if you really, really work at it, yeah. But, I mean, there's a lot of different issues around that. Now, Byron Hurd has a great documentary out about that now, about
black people in food, you know, called soul food. And you know, he talks about these food deserts that exist in our communities. And Byron Hutt's doc, as a matter of fact, is going to be running on PBS. You should definitely check it out because that's a major, major problem. Like if you can go to the store and get, you know, two or three Kraft macaroni and cheese dinners, you know, for $1.50 or whatever, you're going to get that as opposed to spending, you know, $5 on pomegranate juice. You know what I mean? Like this is the kind of thing that exists. And for the most part, black women are the ones that buy the food. You know, they're the ones that take care of the kids. They're the ones that are out here, you know, having to deal with the poverty issues more often than not. So,
yeah. Well, given all that, so what are you saying that black men should take that in consideration and neglect
I'm saying that, yeah, absolutely, they have to take that in consideration, and not only that, but they should be the ones out organizing around that. Why don't these women have proper access to emotional and mental health systems? Why don't we have proper food stores? Why is it that we keep, every time we can't open, we try to open up a really good black grocery, you know, we're not getting loans from banks in order to, you know, these are the things that brothers have to fight around. You know,
well, I have to disagree on the food system because we do have grocery stores here that you have an option or whatever it is that you want to buy.
Well,
some
I don't know
of
where
my
you
shop.
Live, but
well, let me finish if you don't mind.
Food deserts are a big problem. I'm sorry,
yeah,
food deserts are a big problem in the black communities across the country.
Yeah, well, here in the St. Louis area, they have supermarkets and they also have corner stores, and most African Americans shop in those supermarkets. And those super, and I shop in them myself. You're not curtailed to any one particular. You're not curtailed to just ramen noodles. You can, you know, what you're shopping with also applies and works with other things too. Of course,
well, that goes
there's
with
a difference in the price.
Education too. Yeah, there's a difference in price, and it goes different with education and as well and information.
Okay,
so I'm just saying.
It's
all
a
right,
multifaceted
now, y'all
problem.
Hold on now. Hold on. We got to take a quick break. We're gonna finish this. I'm going to mute your mics. When I come back, we're going to open everybody mic back up again, and we're going to continue. But we're in the last hour. I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a little quick break, and we will be right.
Hello, this is Calandra, not your mother, Anna Bomber. And guess what, people? I love President Obama. Yes, I do. I love President Obama. And guess what? I voted for him. Do you want to know why I voted for him? Do you want to know why? Do you want to know why? Because he's black. He black. Yes, I said it. I said it again. I voted for him because he was black. Yes, I did. And guess what? I'm going to get me some health care. Showed up. I don't know why you're looking at me. You need to be at work so you can pay for my health care. I love it. I love it. Yes, I do. I'm getting health care. Ain't got no job. I love America. I love me some America. Me and my seven children. All seven of my children going to get some health care now. Showing up. Sign the bill, honey. Sign the bill. So, anywho, that's all I got to say about it. And if you don't like President Barack Obama, if you don't like him, then you is a racist. Yes, I said it. You is a racist. Uh-huh. Yeah, you are, because you know what? President Obama is doing good by me. Uh-huh, now, yes, I can get sick now. So y'all keep going to work, making all that money, because your taxes is helping me and my chillings. All right, over and out. Thank you. I love America.
I would always listen to that don't nobody fit but
mention of the fact that, don't forget, August the 16th through the 18th, right down here in Jacksonville, Florida, we'll have Morris Summit 2, and we will take you out to our neighborhood that we are transforming into a community and let you see our beautiful gardens that we've got going on out there so we can create a self-sustaining system, and you get a chance to look at that and touch it with your hand. So make sure you're here August the 16th through the 18th. And I'll be doing some cooking, so y'all really need to get here. Also, don't forget, for those of you who are having problems with your mortgage, if you got a problem with contracts, if you got student loans debt, go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. We just put that thing up there, and we got the way to cancel them, babies, okay? www.newfreehelpgroup.com. I'm going to go open up the mic so we can continue on with the discussion of why the brothers are leaving the sisters in America and going to these other places. Okay? All right. Now, everybody, mic is open. And let me go right back and let's take up where we left off at. Come on in, sister and brother Piagi. Come on. Where you still
now? Well, I just wanted to say one thing about what
okay.
he was saying, too, that I wanted to point out that I may have... If you go to Brooklyn, let's say, okay, where there's a heavily Hasidic community, all right, and you decide you're going to go and you're going to open up a store, you're going to have to see them. You're not going to walk into their neighborhood and open up anything unless you talk to somebody. They're men. And they're going to ask you a series of questions before you decide to open up shop, or you won't have shop open. Okay? Where do we have that?
Well,
anybody can roll into our neighborhoods and do whatever they want to do, because we don't have men, brothers, who are too busy running to other countries, basically, at this point, I guess, that, you know, will say, wait a minute. You're not going to roll in here and open up some little Arab store in the corner and put a bunch of junk in it and feed it to our kids. You are going to have to be held accountable for what you bring in here. If you open up something in an Italian neighborhood, you're going to be sure you're going to have an Italian kid working there after school or something. You're not going to have something open up and you don't see their men. So, you know, you can't.
Well, that's kind of that, throw that on to the common black man is really sort of disingenuous.
But you're throwing it on black women to not
no,
have
I'm not throwing it on.
To.
I'm not throwing it on black men.
You got to see like this. She made a true statement due to the fact of like Louisiana and Florida speaking. You know, you got these corner stores everywhere, and that's all they're doing. They're going to have they will not hire none of our kind up in there unless they want us to clean up and grant protection to their stores while they're off in our community. Other than that, if their children are not clicking up with us or going to the schools with us, which most of them go to private schools, it's like that's all they're doing, bringing in a bunch of junk, trash, cheap items, and selling it right to us. You know, and she's right. A lot of us don't speak up about what they're bringing into our community. It's not that she's just throwing it off on us, but a lot of us don't speak up. How many of us could actually raise our hands as black individuals and say, I have a say-so in my community, what goes on. How many? Not many of us can do that. But I can actually say in my, I'm going to say within a four-mile radius areas, in all directions, I have a say-so in my community.
Well, you talk about, you're talking about, the, it's those black professionals that's supposed to, that would be more likely apt to take on those adventures.
Either.
Oh, well, yes.
Well,
who has the background?
Hold
on,
I had to disagree with that one. I got
who has the background?
What,
who
what
has,
has
let me finish. Let me finish.
Ahead.
I said three words, and let me finish this. Let me finish this. Black professionals that's been working in corporations for decades, that's been running other people's business, sometime or another, they would come out and compete against those same companies that they work for. They would come out with the knowledge and probably with the residual capital where they should be controlling of these food outlets that's in the black community. The average everyday black person that's living in these communities don't have the capacity to do that themselves.
Yeah, but
you
the
got
average
places
everyday
in your city where you have built.
The average
you have,
everyday Italian person does.
Well,
you're not
Italians and black people are two different things.
Well, that's what, well, why? I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's that their men stand up and they protect their communities. So you
well,
cannot
I don't
now blame
no.
the women and children for what they're eating if you're letting outsiders come into your community and sell them junk. You have to protect your community as men. That should not be left up to women. That should not be left up to corporate people. That's left up to black men to protect their communities and to say, wait a minute, we don't want these stores here. You are bringing garbage in. Our women are suffering nutritionally. Our children are malnourished because you're bringing foods in that are no good for them, and you have yet to do anything to
well, let me
show
let
that
me point this.
In
let me go at this dollars. With a different angle. You know, we had some people here that was boycotting one of the supermarkets. And guess who told them to get the hell out of the way? It was black people that told them to get out of the way. It's this subculture that you have within black society that, you know, they not interested in no know thyself. They not interested in no history. They not interested in the ravages of slavery. They interested in what they're doing right now. So
and
if you got
that,
black folks, if
just
you have black men
that.
And
but
black
–
well,
let me just
let you
deal
finish,
with that one point.
You,
that
I mean,
one point – I'm just saying, let's just deal with that one point you just made. So what do you do to thwart that problem?
What do you mean, what
you
do you do
mentioned?
To thwart that problem?
To thwart the problem that you just mentioned, that one point that you just made, which is a valid point, what can be done about that?
That's an educational problem right there. That's an
exactly.
educational problem. And
exactly.
who controls – and wait a minute, who controls your board? Look at your Chicago public school system. Who
right.
is the ones that's locking themselves to building? You got black folks who don't want to give up those jobs where schools are closing because you've had black women who have aborted babies, and when it's time 5 years later, when it's time for those children to go into school, the elementary school, they ain't there, so they got to close buildings.
No, what I'm saying is that you said – let's just stick with one point at a time. Your first point was that the reason why the efforts that have been made to stop these people from coming in are stopped by black people is because they're not educated and they're not conscious. So obviously education and consciousness raising has to be put in place. So who is going to do that? The black men that used to do that. We used
well, the black
to
men, the black men,
the
it wasn't just black women.
No,
it wasn't just
men.
Black women that crossed these picket lines. It was black males
no.
too.
Right. What I'm saying is that the consciousness raising historically in our community was done by black men and women, and if you came in and tried to do anything to try to stop that effort, you were stopped in your tracks, dead in your tracks by black men.
Well,
they
you know,
there,
I go into some public
strong,
schools.
And they would not
I go
allow in, to go on.
I go into some public schools, and you don't have black males teaching in public schools. You have black women
well,
teaching in public schools.
But that's not the issue we're dealing with right now.
Well,
right
it
now,
is the issue. The issue that
we
commented on was
about
education.
Nutrition. No, we were talking about how these stores are coming in, setting up shop in our communities, bringing garbage into our communities, making black women look the way they look because there's no food choices. And the reason why that exists is because black people are not protected
in their communities the way Jewish people are and the way Italian people are.
And I told you that when you have movements where people want to protect them, they don't want the protection. They want to continue on as they go.
Black people stand in the way of that. Exactly, I got that point.
The same people that you try, the same people that you complain about are trying to defend, and there's nothing wrong with trying to defend them. They don't want that.
I'm not defending them. What I'm saying is that there is a consciousness raising that has to always be done throughout history. That has always been the case whenever any movement has started. And in order for a consciousness raising effort to be done that comes from conscious black men and women, black men have to defend and protect and give security to that. You usually see when there's any kind of things going on around consciousness raising, whatever, black women out there, they're not protected. So you can't have a movement, even when it's an effort to raise consciousness amongst black people who, as you said, are trying to stop those efforts.
How is the black men in the hood going to prevent people coming in with money to open up stores? How are they going to stop that?
Organized. We've done it before.
They
this
are
not new.
Well,
where are they going to come up? Where are they going to come up with the resources?
Let me tell you what we're doing here. Now, right here in Jacksonville, first of all, we have to understand that throughout the United States, from one end of the United States to the other, we do not have any communities. We have neighborhoods, and what we're going to have to do is transform these in the community, and the men that resides in these neighborhoods, in these square block radiuses, are going to have to take control of these neighborhoods. Now, the reason I'm saying that is because this is exactly what we are doing here. You'll be able to come here August 16th through 18th. You'll see what we got. We got our own security forces. Now, we only have one store in this area that's run by a foreigner. But I told them, no, don't mess with him just yet. Yeah, let's go ahead, build what we got to build first. We've already got hooked up with the credit union, so we're going to start doing our own banking. And we got our security forces right now guarding, but what we're going to do is mark this territory, and the men are going to set up 24-hour patrols on foot, car, motorcycle, truck, and everything else going. And anybody in there that's selling some dope will have to explain it to 35 men. Each man is supposed to be in any given location in less than 2 minutes' time. If you're coming in this community, you're going to have to tell us who you are. If you're going down to see Miss Kathy, we go, hold on a minute. We're going to call Miss Kathy and see if she's expecting you. If she say she don't know you, we have a problem. So this is what you have to do, and this is what we are doing now. Also, the systems that you set up, you got to set the system up where you are able to provide
protection
for the women and children. Huh? We're right here in Jacksonville, Florida.
But you got foreigners, you got immigrants that's in your community that's addressing one of your consumer habits. So how are you going to move them out?
We don't have any of that. Everybody in that in where we are.
Where do you buy your gasoline for that go in your car from?
We're gonna get all of that. You can supply your own gasoline if you know how. You can supply your own water without being connected to the city system.
Tarharka, black people are not going to go back to wood-burning stoves and give up their microwaves.
I'm not talking about that, man. Listen, I'm only telling you what I'm doing. There's no way around a man manning up and taking responsibility for his environment and providing protection for the women and children in his sphere. And he marks his
women
territory.
If you want to see black women lose weight, then they'll feel safe enough too in those kind of situations. They'll feel safe enough to not have to run to a church where they're promised that some non-existent Lord is going to save them and make them feel safe. They won't have to run and get a Snickers bar or a piece of cake because they'll feel safe
And that's the primary issue that you're dealing with. It's all a matter of a feeling of safety, and we are lacking in that, and that's why you see the physical manifestation displayed in black women's bodies. You're seeing a physical manifestation of a lack of feeling safe.
Well, Taharka, what you're saying sounds good. I would like to get a report from you periodically so we can understand what the, how your progress is coming along.
Well, y'all can come down
show
and
me
see
how.
It,
I would like to. You there in Jackson, Mississippi?
No, we down in Jacksonville, Florida.
Jacksonville, Florida. You down in Jacksonville, Florida, which is another large black economic market. I would like to know exactly what percentage of your food consumption is controlled by others, and after a period of time, exactly how much of it you take over with your plan.
Well,
you
what, we
remember,
doing,
the free breakfast
what we are
program
doing, what we are doing right now, this is what
party,
we have.
You know?
Yeah, both of you talking
have
at the same time. I can't hear.
We're growing our own food. Now, we're starting off with our raised beds. We have our own gardens, but right now, this is what we have right now, but then we have the plans, and we're getting the equipment to go into hydro and aquaponic systems. In other words, urban hydro and aquaponics, where we will be able to put the fish in there and allow the poop from the fish to fertilize the food. So we got organic fruits and vegetables. We got all your grocery stores in the city that's importing fish and fruits and vegetables from out of the country. And it's contaminated with chemicals. But ours will be grown organically, and so there will be no need for them to be going investing in shipping stuff from another country when they can come right to our gated community that doesn't have any fences around it, that's clearly marked, and all the men in there is patrolling the community and take responsibility for the community and taking the women who have who don't have a husband to have children, and we are setting up occupations for these children to do right there in the community. This is what we're doing. But you're going to have to be self-sustaining, and the money to do this has to come out of your own pocket. Everybody have to be on the same page with the same plan, and this is what we're doing here right now. And not only that, I just come out of the Keys, and I seen little Cuba and little Haiti, where they got the same thing going. But now my reason for being down there is to provide aerial support in the event somebody don't like what we're doing. So far, we only have a few, but we got them. You got to get the support.
All right,
well,
I would be interested to see how well this is pulled off, and expect for you to be able to provide to the listeners, myself and the listeners, a periodic report on your progress.
Well, I announce it every time I do a show.
What he's doing is not new, you know. And like I said, if you go to various communities throughout the country, you know, where I said, like I said, you go out there to where the Hasidic Jews are in Brooklyn, or you go, you know, to the different event neighborhoods where you're not going to just come in, you're not going to roll up in their community and do whatever you want to do. It's just not going to happen. You know, like that's just a given. It's not even a question. It's no major, you know, discussion around it or anything. It's like you're just not going to do that. So this is what we have to have. We have to have that same mentality. Instead of these brothers running off somewhere, they need to be dealing with these things in this way, because that's the only way that you're going to find that, you know, women then begin to feel safe enough to be innovative, to have the wherewithal to be themselves, you know, to be expressive and creative. Because this is, as we all know, you know, always will, always have been creative, always have been able to manage and do things well, you know, with or without weight. You know, we've been
well,
able to make miracles.
Well, what
Taharka
is talking
back
about is nothing new. Back
you
in
know
the 70s, Leon Sullivan done the same thing. You had a preacher down
I
in
said
Mississippi
that's what I just said.
That
it's
done the same
new
thing. But here's the point. Now that you have these immigrants who have gotten a foothold in your community, for instance, we had a brother here who started a supermarket and wanted to expand, and he went to a bank trying to get money. Mm-hmm. And the Arab went to the bank and tried to get money. And you have a bank officer there listening to both of them. So the Arab made a statement. He said, next Wednesday, I'll have you 7 new accounts. And he just merely got on the phone and called up his other friends' businesses in the southern Illinois areas, and they took their money out where they were banking and all put them in this one bank. So, I mean, those are the obstacles and the realities that you're going to have to face. Once these people get in, and another thing, in another community, you have Arab businesses that are buying police cars for the black community. So who do you think the police department is going to be behooving to?
Well, brother, I'm not gonna. All I'm doing is just telling you what we're doing. Let me open up a couple of these lines here. And 310 and 832. 310, come on in.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, you know, what you're doing in Jacksonville. That's exactly what needs to be done. I understand what the lady is talking about in reference to the men taking leadership roles in the community. But at the same time, you know, it's the city hall that grants them their licenses to be able to put up those businesses. Where we control that is we have to have a social contract on our moves and what we're going to do as a community. If there is a liquor store that's being planted or something that's being sold as garbage, then we, black men, can say, yes, okay, we're going to boycott this store or this business, but we don't necessarily control every individual, let alone the challenge of waking up people's minds to getting a financial IQ and understanding how this world system that we live in is set up. And that is the challenge. What is that called?
What you just ran down just now, what is that called?
What that is called is first we have to reach those who are not connected mentally to what's going on and waking up and having a conscious of being aware of their surroundings. One thing that I have recently learned from looking at all of the movements that have been able to have an influence on a mass group of people, from Marcus Garvey, the Black Panthers, the Nation of Islam, they all had to draw the masses by providing the things that give us that post-traumatic stress disorder, which is food, clothing, shelter, education, jobs, and knowing what to do on to become an entrepreneur. Because that we live in a capitalistic system where if you don't own your own business, then you're just going to be in poverty. And what people don't understand is that the poverty level based on census and the Board of Labor and it's based that if you are making under $70,000 a year, you are in poverty. You don't have enough money to have your own place to live. You don't have food, let alone child care and all of that other stuff. If you're making under $70,000 based on inflation per year, you are in poverty. That is the way how it is right now. And people are the average person, more than half, I just read something that is reaching 75% right now, are in poverty in this country. That's just not our people.
Yeah.
Most people, the average income, they're making like $2,000 a month, and that's across the board, even in the states and cities that have a high cost of living.
And what you think?
832. Come on in.
Islam,
let me have it.
Hello, man. I'm like what the brothers say. I feel him on that note, and I want to give honors for you doing the program that y'all got going on up there. For that brother, he got to realize and recognize whatever area he's in and where he's at. It's us that runs a whole lot. It's going to be some humbug with those brothers who's not quite conscious of where they are and what time it is. Because this nation's time, you know, and those of us who care about us gonna step up to the plate, you know.
Correct.
There are going to be some martyrs, and that's already understood, even though we took a
break. And I don't even focus on them.
You know, but this is where we're going with this, and we just got to step up. Say, like, the same program you got, we took over a couple of apartments out here in Texas. You know, and it's the street organization itself that stopped a lot of things. I'm gonna give them their name, 5-9 Bloods. They stopped a whole lot of shenanigans that was going on, along with a lot of police brutality that was going on through here. It's all about standing up for the right things. Like I told the brothers, if y'all could come together on some bullcrap, y'all could come together on some real issues. We night flight out here. We some of the Moors that go off into the dungeons at night and try to come and pull out some of the brothers that's deep behind enemy lines, you know, where some of the Moors won't dwell. We go out and get those brothers, you know, those brothers that they heard a little bit of this, that, and the other, and they in the state, but they don't have an avenue to get out. So, all right, this is the avenue we give you. Come and learn about yourself. Let's get you some employment. Let's find you some employment. What can you do? What are you capable of doing? Do you have any skills? If you have any skills, let's see if we can make you up with one of these brothers that have something going on, that's building these houses, that's laying foundations, that's doing brickwork, brick mason work. You know, it's different avenues. Once you fellowship with Moors and other individuals on a real-life level as a man standing for your community, you will be recognized as that individual. But if you stay cowered down, nobody will recognize you, and they will continue to trample over you. Islam,
Mo, you're absolutely correct. I'm bringing in 404. Come on in, 404. Are you
there? How you doing? Yes, sir.
You have it, man. Loud and clear.
Okay, the Pharisee Mutuil out of Cherokee County, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And about the lady, she was talking about the communities and all that. It seemed like, to me, how she's saying, she seemed like she, like, if you really want to, like, okay, I'm going to tell you about the Moors in Spain. The Moors in Spain failed because they taught the Europeans how to make guns and gunpowder technology. We ruled over there for 800 years. And when they taught them Europeans how to make guns, they conquered the world. Now we nation building right now. Now we got to learn how to make some guns. We know how to organize. We know how to get the money. But you know what I'm saying? I know down there in Jackson, y'all know what to do with the money. Y'all building y'all Black Wall Street down there. But all the other communities, like the gangs, we need to educate the gangs like that. You know
what
I'm saying?
That's why I'm at, bro. That's why I'm at. I'm deep down there with Vice Lords, Bloods, Latin Kings, Disciples, Gangster Disciples, Black Disciples. I'm down there with Crips of all different sets. You know, I don't discriminate. And as soon as we get our building, Temple 2D, down here in Texas territory, as soon as we get our building, I told them, brothers, they all welcome to come on in and hear about themselves.
Yes, sir.
Well, we got 19 minutes left, and we're going to take another little quick break. And when we come back, we'll be ready to roll. Okay? So y'all just hold your hat. We'll be right back, and then we'll continue on with our discussion.
My name is Justina Clayton. Justina means justice in Sierra Leone. I came to the U.S. about 11 years ago to flee a civil war. I'd like to braid hair at home because I have two young children, and a third on the way, and I can make some money for grocery and some other things that we might need as a family. I can't braid right now because the Utah Cosmetology Board told me that it is illegal to do so without a cosmetology license, even though that if I go to school to get the license, they won't teach me hair braiding.
Traditional African hair braiding is the braiding, twisting, or locking of hair without the use of chemicals. These natural styles originated centuries ago in Africa and have endured as a distinct and popular form of hairstyling primarily done by and for persons of African descent.
African braiding does not threaten anybody's health or safety. With African braiding, you don't cut hair, you don't use chemical, you don't use any other tools that would alter the natural state of a person's hair. So if I braid somebody's hair and they decide they don't want it, at the end of the braiding session, they can remove that braid and their natural hair remains the same.
Utah requires people like Justina to get an expensive and useless cosmetology license in order to braid hair for money, even though they can braid all they want for free. That license requires at least 2,000 hours of classroom instruction. That's 40 hours a week for 50 weeks. That is more class hours than it takes to be an armed security guard, mortgage loan originator, real estate sales agent, EMT, and lawyer, combined. And not one of those 2,000 hours teaches African hair braiding.
When I found out that Utah required a cosmetology license to braid hair, I contacted the cosmetology board, and I was invited to speak at their board meeting. And then they told me at the meeting that I needed to contact my legislature to see if they can change the rules. I did that, but so far I haven't had anybody to help me.
When the government imposes unreasonable regulations, as is done here, courts need to step in to protect the right to earn an honest living. No one should have to hire a lawyer or a lobbyist just to braid hair.
I'm a mother of 11 children, 7 adopted from Ethiopia. There is an unmet demand in Utah for cornrowing and hair braiding. There's a lot of us adoptive moms that try and really can't do that service for our children. And because it's a temporary service, it's hard for us to try and pay or go the distance for the salon services. So I think there's a lot of people here in Utah that can do that service without a cosmetology license, where they could earn a little extra money and provide a service for us adoptive moms at a lower cost.
The Institute for Justice has challenged the application of cosmetology laws to natural hair braiders in 7 states in our 20-year history, including our very first case back in 1991. To date, we haven't lost a hair braiding case yet. IJ has filed lawsuit in Utah to protect Justina's right to earn an honest living. Both the federal and Utah constitutions protect every individual's right to earn an honest living in their chosen occupation, free from arbitrary and irrational government regulations.
Okay, Moore, we back. I'm going to open up the lines, but I want to say that, first of all, we have to start looking at our own survival. The United States of America Corporation does not interfere with your right to make contract. We're under the impression that we are supposed to abide by every contract that's pushed in front of us, and we had to put our signature on it. But that's not true. If you didn't write it, don't sign it. And it doesn't interfere with your right to make your own contract. So when you put on paper what you're going to decide to do, and you get with the people that stand to benefit from what you are about to do, and everybody's going to be able to profit from what you're going to do, and you're able to answer in their minds, what can I profit, how can I profit, where can I profit, when can I profit, why can I profit, who says I can profit, you answer these questions through benefits to be gained and losses to be avoided, you get some cooperation. But now we have to look at growing our own food. Food, air, and water is what sustains life, and you build from there. But you got to have that first. You got to be able to harness the energy of the Crips and the Bloods and all these different groups and put them together in constructive format in order to benefit the neighborhood as a whole and transform it into a self-sustaining, thriving community that provides and protects for everybody that's in that satellite. Everybody in there is going to get a benefit and have ownership and stake in what you're doing, and therefore they are bound to protect and defend the entire system when you get that going on. So we need to really seriously think about that. I'm opening up the lines. 510, your line is open.
Wow. Sounds like you're really making some good positive strides, and that's commendable. And you're doing, it seems like, what men are supposed to be doing, which is providing for and protecting, and that's commendable. I wanted to get back, though, to the topic about Brazil.
Okay, here we go.
Session. You know, the gentleman that was talking that's married to the West African woman, or whoever he's East African or whatever she is, he's gone. When he said he's interested in learning, finding out how, you know, your program develops and how it's doing, basically he's hoping to hear you say that it failed. It's not going to. But that's what he basically wants to know. And then he'll be able
you
to say,
Pianca, I think Bianca want that. You think that's what Pianca wanted to see fail? I don't think Pianca want that.
Absolutely.
Yes, suspect.
I never heard a Brazilian woman say anything like that, but go ahead.
Well, it's okay because, you know, you stick with your Brazilian women because, you know, you're not, you wouldn't be good for an African-American woman. You know that.
What are
you
talking funny.
About?
That's funny. Well, wait a minute.
Are you serious?
See, that's That's what I'm talking about. See, I married my ten. I married. Well, wait a minute. Well, go ahead. When you get done talking, let me know so I can say something.
No. You talk enough. I'm listening to you. It's my turn.
Taharka, is this your show?
Yeah.
Listen, it's my turn.
Oh, you heard me. Are you serious?
Taharka, tell me when I can talk.
All
right. Well, we.
Okay, we don't play that. Okay.
So I can tell me when I can talk.
No,
I'm gonna let you know. Go ahead, Susan.
Listen,
we got but 11 minutes now. We don't have but 11 minutes, so be brief.
Okay. You know, and this is a lot of what you're doing. Not only are they going to Brazil, they're going to the Dominican Republic because it's even cheaper than Brazil. I know men that have gone. One to go every chance you can get. He's a sign over to the Dominican Republic. But you know what? That came to a complete stop because he got something that it was hard for penicillin to cure. And that's another thing they're not talking about is the high rate of STDs and HIV in Brazil. The Dominican Republic, there's a high rate of bisexuality and homosexuality as well in Brazil. And I know people that have gone there to come back.
All right. Hold on now. We got but a few minutes. Hold on. You got to let us have it. Hold on. All right. Now I'm going down here to 310. Come on in. 310.
I think he's scared.
All right, 314. 314.
Oh, well, you know, I really don't want to get into this. When I married my 10-year-old sweetheart, was with her for nearly 45 years. So to say that I'm not don't want to marry an African American woman is totally irrelevant. Taharka, I'm talking to you. And the attitude and thing of women then is nowhere like they are today. But, you know, I really don't want to get into the part about diseases and everything. We know the statistics here in the United States. I'm saying as black males, and I'm also, and I told you before, we could apply the same thing. I'm saying black females, we also could apply the same thing to black males. But black males, I recommend to many and know many that don't limit yourself to what you have in your neighborhood, your state, or this country. Move out abroad and see what the world has to offer. Women, black women in other societies have whole entire different attitudes. Their reason for marrying is different. I mean, people don't vote for people just because they're black. That's all there is to black vote for is black. And you don't get an Obama phone when you do vote for a person. So I'm just going to leave it like that.
Okay. All right. Let me open up the next line. All right. Come on in. 832. Final comments.
Man. You know, I'm just sitting back and I'm listening. Sister, she said what she wanted to say. You know, I understand where she's coming from, but she was making a lot of ruckus. You know, we got to get this together. We got to pull together. As you stated earlier, as circle for certain, these brothers got to learn about agriculture. It's a whole lot of things we got to learn about growing and producing our own food with the farmland and everything. Same thing I was telling the Crips and the Bloods out here and the Disciples, you know. If I can, give me your children for the two or three of these weekends out of the summer. We get in the park and we can do the bean display. showing how the bean starts off from the sprout by splitting in half, you know. Let them know what the photosynthesis is and how it helps us, you know. Just giving them key aspects,
okay.
And if they can see their children interacting with us, they have to be present there too. And hopefully something will sink inside of the parents' head.
Okay. All right, I appreciate it, brother. All right, let's open up here on 951. Come on in briefly, 951.
Hi, that's thank you for allowing me to speak. First off, as a black woman, let me say this. I do not have an issue with black men who decide they want to date outside of their race or date other black women in other countries. Personally, as a black woman, I feel our black women, especially in this country, are angry, bitter, and hostile towards black men. So black women always complain about how black men don't want to provide, don't want to take care, and don't want to do. But the reality is a lot of us don't allow men to be men. We want to be men instead of letting the black men in our lives be the men that we want them to be. I am a black woman who dates outside of my race. I don't look at color as a mitigating factor when it comes to picking a mate. And so for black women to say a black man should only date a black woman is an ignorant statement. I completely agree with the brother who says that black men should date outside of their race, whether it be internationally, locally, state, whatever the case may be. Life is too short to basically, I guess, limit your options. And black women, especially in this country, don't like competition. If you want a black man and you want to keep one, get back with the attitude. Get back with having to have the last word, be the man, or whatever the case it is that you're trying to be. You need to understand that there you have a role as a woman, and your role as a woman is to allow your man to be a man and stop trying to overstep him, overtalk him, overgesture him, or whatever else it is. Black women, my mother is a black woman that I completely respect when it comes to men. You support, you don't talk over your black men, you don't belittle them, you don't bash them. There are men that don't do what they're supposed to do in our community, yes. I will be for the first one to say that. But as a black woman, demeaning them is not going to make them want to do it any better. They're just going to want to go off, run off what we're seeing now, fling from us instead of trying to cling to us. Our community is getting smaller, and it's all because of these women who have so much angst and anger in their voice. As a black woman, I'm just going to apologize on all black women's behalf that have that type of attitude, because guess what? At the end of the day, it's not making the community better. It's actually dividing us more, and that's all I have to say about the comment.
Okay. Appreciate you for your comment, sister. We've come to the end of the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. I wish I had more time, but we just don't, and I certainly appreciate all of you being here and giving us your comments, and please stay tuned for other broadcasts coming up. We're going to be dealing with Brother Renoco on some things in our ancient story and stuff coming up on tomorrow's broadcast. And I have been your host, Tahaka Mana El Bay, and I hope you all have enjoyed yourself, and you all have a good day.
one you're with. You gotta love the one you're with. Tonight, well, you ain't gonna need.